rowdy.
You're live.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the May 10th, 2011 San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Could you please rise and join us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Before we start, I'd like to take a moment to remember supervising custodian Pat Elliott, who passed away suddenly last Tuesday evening. Pat worked for the county for 18 years. He was a very dedicated county employee, a mentor to others, and always provided the utmost in customer service and was known by all his friends and colleagues as extremely fun-loving. He is survived by his wife, Robin, his children, David and Carly, his mother, Charlene, a sister, and three brothers. We will be flying our county flag outside at half-mast, and I believe this will begin a policy that whenever we lose someone in our county family, we will, in fact, fly our county flag at half-mast to show our respect for them. So if we could please just take a moment to remember Pat and his family. Thank you. I know Pat will be deeply missed. Madam Clerk, could you please read changes to the agenda?
The changes to today's agenda is we have an added item to closed session. One, pending litigation. A, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation. 12, in regards to Los Osos Community Services District, bankruptcy court case number ND06-10548-RR. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you. We are going to go into the consent agenda, and if I could have – well, actually, I don't have any – do we have any public comments on that? I have no comments unless Mr. Greening is insisting that he has a – We'll be looking to see if there's any. Is anyone there want to speak on the consent, not on public comment general, but on the consent? I don't think I've gotten any slips, so, and I don't see anyone raising their hands. So I will close consent for public comment and bring it back to my colleagues on the board and see if they have any items that they would like to comment on. Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to abstain on item A8, which is a lease out at the airport, since I am among a group that is a tenant at the airport.
Okay. Mr. Patterson?
No, sir.
Mr. Teixeira?
No, sir.
Mr. Meacham?
Comment on A1, please, sir.
Okay. Mr. Meacham.
Thank you. A1 is a resolution that's requesting a transfer of State Highway Route 41 through the town of Shandon. Been working on this for a while, and I want to compliment staff for working with the state on this. This will give us an opportunity to take this kind of under the control of the county that goes through the community of Shandon and to be able to do some improvements there without the onerous process of going through Caltrans. So I'm very excited about this, and the community of Shandon is very pleased with it as well. So my thanks to staff for getting that completed.
Thank you, sir. And with that, I will entertain a motion. Okay. Moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Teixeira, with Mr. Gibson abstaining on A8. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. We will then swiftly move into our public comment period on matters not on the agenda. Thank you all. We're here for consent. And I will begin with Susan Warren, followed by Ben DeFada. This is for items not on the agenda today, please. Ms. Warren, good morning.
Good morning, Supervisors.
I'm Susan Warren, and I live in Cambria, work in Atascadero. What I wanted to bring to you today was something that I picked up in a local newspaper, and I do have copies for the board, and it's a public education seminar that's coming up. It's going to be Saturday, May 21st at the Slo Vets Hall from 9 to 4:30. This is free and open to the public, and it's on rethinking drinking. And we have some local experts, several of whom I do know and some that I only know of by their excellent reputations. This is an opportunity not only for LVNs, physical therapists, registered nurses, and all MFTs and LCSWs to get continuing education credits, but it's open to the public. And I really encourage you and to encourage your staff, even people from county planning, anybody to take a look at this because it really looks at addiction and from every aspect, from the physiology, psychology, health risks, parenting in the teenage alcoholic, fetal alcohol, and the economic impact on our county. And I've included with this a copy of our California State Health and Welfare Codes that talks about how we need as a county to be sure we're addressing these issues. And what we're looking for here in our county is some balance. And I understand that our county, number one, is tourism around here, as is agriculture, to support our county. I spent many years in the tourism industry, and I know that alcohol is a big piece of that and funds this county. But at the same time, as you will see in the health and welfare codes, we need to have a balance. Some people, as you will find, have a physical issue with this, with addiction. And so we need, as a county, to be able to offset the fact that we have more, at least twice, if not more, than the number of alcohol outlets in our county than any other county. We're way above what the alcohol and beverage control allows. And as long as this is integrated into our county, we need to offer services, we need to understand what we're dealing with and work with that. And so I just ask that here's a wonderful opportunity, first time I've seen this in our county, and I really want to thank these doctors and people for putting this together. And hopefully maybe we could even get it taped by AGP so people could see these portions over our public access. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, board. Ben DeFatta from Los Angeles here, again representing the many hundreds that cannot attend your meeting at this time of day. As Lindy Owen mentioned to you last week about how the small pipe, shallow trench, affordable step system works, I would like to inform you of how another alternative like the vacuum system works. Both proven alternatives are at least $40 million cheaper than Mr. Gibson and Ogren's proposed stinking antiquated gravity project that costs $165 million plus interest that totals $200 million when it's done. It's very simple, as you will see. Here's a picture of it here. A small diameter pipe is attached at the house that makes its way to the street with little disturbance to much of the landscaping. This pipe flows down to the street to a tank the size of a 55-gallon drum where several homes can be connected to. At the effluent level goes up in the tank, barometric pressure opens the valve that sends the effluent through sealed small pipes that's buried in shallow trenches that greatly reduce evacuation, dewatering efforts, surface disruption, and the danger associated with larger, deeper trenches needed of gravity pipes. Nowhere is electrical power needed at the house or tank. Because the effluents travel at 15 feet a second, it is eviscerated by the time it reaches the treatment plant, making it easier and faster for the digestive process to proceed. For the treatment plant, forget that part. During the trenching phase, field changes can be easily made to unforeseen underground obstacles by going over, under, or around them. And I'm sure Los Osos has a lot of unforeseen obstacles like native artifacts, unmarked gas lines, storm pipes, and who knows what else. No need to bring in 20-foot-high steel walls to prevent landslides into trenches that's needed for gravity pipes and larger cranes, too. There is no need for hundreds of deep manholes that's required by the gravity collection system to clean out on a timely schedule. Vacuum collection is operator friendly since vacuum systems are completely sealed and operating personnel are not exposed to raw sewage like gravity collection is. O&M is way less than gravity also. Unlike large deep gravity pipes that totally rely on gravity, constant plug-ups need periodic maintenance by personnel to go down into hundreds of manholes to unplug these gravity pipes, further exposing these people to injury or death. In the case of vacuum pipes, in rare instances of a spillage, leaks would not happen as air would enter the pipe, setting off an alarm immediately with the location of the leak for personnel to fix fast and easy. Unlike the gravity system with its wide cuts in the roadways and up to 22 feet deep trenches, vacuum collection needs only 4 to 5 feet deep and 3 or 4 feet wide trenches. Costs at least $40 million cheaper than Mr. Gibson or Ogren's gravity collection.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Mr. Greening, followed by Rafael Montemayor.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I guess this is an opportune time to bring up an issue relative to the county building across the street, since all of the players, including five directors of the Regional Transit Authority, are in the room. A few months ago, your board acted on an opportunity that I am supportive of to change the landscaping around that building from water-thirsty turf to native landscaping, and our good friends from the Botanic Garden were going to oversee that project in connection with the county. And I raised the issue that even though it's an excellent idea because it lets the public sector be the example to the private sector of what water-conserving landscaping is and what value there is in our native vegetation, I did raise the issue that the transit stop there for the regional buses, the 9, 10, and 12 that use that, and particularly on summer afternoons when the most people are there during the afternoon hours from 3 to 6 migrating out of San Luis Obispo, that the shelters themselves are solar ovens, and a large portion of the public actually uses the space, the turf, reclines on, makes themselves comfortable on the turf behind those shelters because it's the only shade there on hot afternoons when the sun is blasting the front side of those shelters. And as I recall, our good friends from the Botanic Garden were going to take this into account and were going to work with the Regional Transit Authority on this. So I was discouraged last Wednesday when the issue came up to hear that at least, according to Mr. King, no contact had been made. I don't know if that's correct information or incorrect information, but if no contact had been made as of then, I hope that has been or is about to be remedied because the needs of the bus passengers do need to be taken into account. That is space that they need. They need the shade back there. And if it's not going to be turf, at least it shouldn't be yuccas. And there should be places to be, places to sit, places, even little beach towel-sized patches of turf, a subversive thought, could be cool and pleasant places to enjoy the native vegetation around, but we do need that shade. Those of us who use the buses need that shade, and we need that coordination to take place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Montemuro, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm here to speak on item C2 on the agenda, and it's...
This is general public comment, so we...
I understand,
ask
sir, but
for you to
I had...
on items not on the agenda.
I had C2 on my slip that I turned in, and that's why
I'm sorry.
The opportunity
that's my
to
fault.
Speak.
Can you hold on until we get to C2?
Absolutely, sir.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'm sorry. It was
my
mistake.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Lindy Owen, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from the Los Osos Sewer Twilight Zone. Good morning, everybody. I'm here with my same old question, as I know it's old and you're tired of hearing it, but I just want to go back to asking why, when Los Osos had an alternative sewer underway looking at a septic tank effluent collection system. It's a small pressure pipe, which is considered to be about half of the price of the current proposed collection system, with very few of the problems and very few of the dangers. Why, when that project was taken away from our CSD and by Mr. Sam Blakesley, and given 2701 was given giving the project to the county so that the county could build a sewer, because it was then considered that a CSD couldn't do that. Well, that project was supposed to be evaluated. The promise from the county and from Noel King at the time was that we would be looking at the most affordable alternative. Because we had an alternative, which was the small pipe collection, we had paid $500,000 for the study. You would have thought that when the county took the project over, that Mr. King would have embraced the look at that technology. His announcement the day that he took the project over in 2007 was that we will not be looking at any alternative collection system. We will only be looking at gravity collection. Now, what's important about that is when you are looking at a sewer project, 70% of the cost of a sewer is collecting. Then there's the plant, then there's the disposal. Those are small in comparison with the cost of collecting all of that. Los Osos, as a built-out city, would benefit by having the small pressure pipe system put in, because it doesn't go down the middle of the street. Your septic tank pre-treats all of the waste that comes out. And as I said last week, with good care, you don't need to pump them out for maybe 20 to 30 years. The problem was that Noel King chose to say that there would be no alternatives looked at. So that really went against what the 2701 promised us, and then Pava Ogren took over and stepped into his position as public works manager and continued saying that we would be looking at alternatives. We spent 2 years and many millions of dollars supposedly looking at alternatives, but interestingly, at the end, there were no alternatives. The only one was to continue with the same project that had been rejected by the community years before. This is important because we're looking at a project that is going to move one-third of my community out with payments of $200 and up per month just for flushing a toilet. You are basically erasing the lower and middle, some of the middle class up from my community at the worst time. Thank you.
Mr. Margetson, followed by Al Barrow.
Richard Margetson. Back to the rates and charges ordinance. Took a break from it last week. This will actually be the last time I will address this before you. I think I've proven the other points in the past. Two names, two words for you to write down that will come back to haunt this ordinance are Bay Ridge Estates and Vista de Oro. Improperly addressed in the ordinance. Staff knows we're right, but as Mr. Gibson said at his recent office hours, he thinks he speaks for his colleagues when he believes you no longer want to hear about this and he'd rather we just sue you and get it over with. I think that's irresponsible leadership to tell the community it's better to sue us than to sit down with us and try to figure this out, since staff does know the ordinance is wrong. It's also a shame that members of the public were probably more qualified to put this ordinance together than staff and your consultant. My last comment deals with how Los Osos has been treated with respect to public comment. Last week, we reached an all-time low. In the past, 3 minutes has been cut down to 2 minutes. The sheriff has been in the back of the room trying to intimidate public speakers since Mr. Hill took the chair. But last week, a new tactic. You had consent calendar. You had 45 minutes of presentations. You started public comment. And at 10:15, an hour and 15 minutes into your morning schedule, Mr. Hill must have thought that you were all exhausted and needed a break. public comment was stopped, just as the Los Osos speakers were ready to be called. Inappropriate, not appreciated, and you as the other elected officials should be standing up for all of your constituents, not just the ones in your district. The last word for the day, addle, very addle.
Mr. Barrow, are you ready? Yeah, you'll get a help there from our parks director. Yeah.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow. Good morning. I come here today just to remind you that the county collaborated with CAPSLOW Community Action Partnership to enumerate the homeless population. And so I wanted to briefly remind everyone that that is available, and I asked the board if they would ask Patricia Gomez to make a presentation at the chamber here in the near future, which is something I think she would be better qualified than I to do. However, I would like to point out that there are almost 50% of all the homeless humans are children, school age, under 18 years old. So I don't know if you can imagine all the times you had to get your children ready to go to school, get them on the bus or get them in the car, feed them, clothe them, get them ready to go. Try doing that when you don't have a place to live. But all these children are required to go to school, and the county has a responsibility under the truant laws to make sure that they do. So we have a real problem here because the housing, low-income housing market here is really taken up. It's full. I mean, there's just hardly anything available at all. So we really need, you know, like 1,000 units of low-income to moderate-income permanent housing for people, aside from the efforts for a shelter. And I would like the staff to show now the picture that I just sent the DD over. There's a picture of a young boy, and that's the opening. This young man is one of the homeless children, and this is the beginning of the report. And there's also a press release that shows how many children and how many people are permanently homeless. So we have a serious, serious problem here, because even if we could find money for them, it would be hard for us to find a home for them. But they desperately need that. So I put up on the screen over here, if you could switch back to the other overhead, the phone number for Melissa Musgrave. And she's with San Luis Unified School District. If you would like to help mentor any of these families or children in any way, it might just be giving them advice, helping them with homework, doing a little counseling, or actually donating a fund to help them get into housing. Whatever you can do, call the Unified School District, talk to Melissa Musgrave, who is the homeless coordinator there. And I thank you very much for that. And I'd also like to say the county's done a wonderful job of trying to make the unaffordable sewer look affordable. And it's going to really impact a lot of families in our town.
And that will close public comment. I will bring it back to the board. Supervisor Patterson, you had?
Yes, I just wanted to respond to a couple of things, Supervisor Hill, if I may, regarding Eric Greening's comment on the landscape demonstration across the street. General Services has been made aware, as well as the Botanical Garden folks who are spearheading that effort, about the need for some shade and seating along the Los Osos Street part of that project. So thank you for your comments. And it's in the very early planning stages, so we can incorporate seating and shade along the Los Osos side. And also, since Mr. Barrow brought up the homeless enumeration study, It was just released, and it is available on the county's website, slowplanning.org, the planning department website, if anyone's interested in taking a look at that.
Okay, thank you. Madam Clerk, could you please introduce the first item of the morning?
First item is D1, a consideration of 1, a request by the Friends of San Luis Obispo Botanical Gardens of a resolution concerning the use of $319,500 of public facility fee funds to construct landscape and hardscape renovations, and 2, a request to amend the Public Facilities Fee Fund Public Financing Plan Chapter 3.3 Park Facility Inventory to include San Luis Obispo Botanical Gardens as an eligible for public facility fee funding, and 3, a corresponding budget adjustment from the Public Facilities Fee Fund to the Parks Land Fund, 2nd District.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Mr. Black, I see, has joined us here up on the dais, ready to kick us off on this item. Give him some time to get his...
The mouse,
okay. There we go. Just do those things that Vin Scully does during baseball games and tell stories. Stories about when he played baseball in the Great Depression. And now I see.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Hill and members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm Curtis Black, Deputy Director of County Parks. Please note, Attachment C, the vicinity map, was inadvertently left off of the report for you, and it's been distributed by the clerk. Today we're going to provide a report from the Friends of San Luis Obispo Botanical Gardens. It's a request for $300,000 worth of PFF funding and some additional funding for management. It's for landscape and hardscape improvements at the gardens located within El Choro Regional Park. And as the board can see, we have quite a number of our friends with us and a few of the board members who'd like to speak on this project as well. Today we're going to present this project, including the proposal, the features, everything, the elements of the project for you to see. And we'll note the cost to manage the project from the county side, review board and the contributions received from the Friends, and discuss some countywide parks and recreation needs. And we will receive direction from your board. We've had a successful partnership with the Friends since 1994. Originally, it was a long-term use permit. And then on February 28, 2006, it became a long-term lease, a 99-year lease that doesn't expire until the year 2105. Through many, many donations and in-kind services, the Friends have been able to complete really remarkable improvements at the site. They estimate the value of those improvements to be over $1.5 million. All of the construction and operations, maintenance of the garden since 1994 have been completed by the Friends at no cost to the county. Should the partnership end at some point in the future, actually the entire property and all the amenities would become property of the county. This is our proposed project, and it's noted in Attachment A, along with all of the proposed proposal information that the Friends provided. As I said, the construction costs are at $300,000. At the center of this, you can see the completed Oak Glen Pavilion. This proposed project is actually a part of the project that completed Oak Glen Pavilion. So no additional environmental work was required, just needed to review that file and note the conditions of that project. Community benefits found through this project completion would include greatly enhanced aesthetic features and educational amenities. Visitors would find a new ornamental water feature, custom artistic tiles, a new 250-seat amphitheater with a retractable awning to shade attendees in the summer, and much, much more. The project would also improve a small portion of Dairy Creek Road as it crosses into the adjacent parking lot. The designs and the conceptual drawings and drawings have been completed by the Friends, and so that's not a cost that they're seeking to see reimbursed or provided through this request. Their total construction costs are $300,000, though General Services Administration, ARC Services, manages all projects that complete any features, fixtures on county lands. So they would typically charge about 6.5% of the total project cost in order to review plans, make any consultation on change orders, do post-construction inspections for disbursement of funds, and all of that. So that would be approximately $19,500 there if the full $300,000 is granted. So our total project request right here for park facility fee funding would be $319,500. The component costs were also listed in case the board wanted to choose some amount less than, and they're listed on page 3 of the report. All of those costs are noted by the Friends and by their architects, and the board can review those. I'm sure you've seen those previously. While this has been presented as a grant request, the County Parks doesn't actually have a public facility fund grant process. If we did, we would develop grant criteria, and we'd do a public announcement to all agencies of the opportunity to apply for a grant. Then we'd have those grants, those applications rated, and we would finally rank them and provide funding to the highest ranked. However, it's not unusual for the county to provide PFF funding to another agency. And so we would simply call this not a grant but a funding request. And similar funding has been provided for partnering with the purchase of Wild Cherry Canyon in order to purchase the 100-acre property next to Dan Adobe and have that maintained by the Friends of the Adobe. And also up Moonstone Trail up in Cambria. Smaller project, $20,000 that the service district is handling for us. Financial considerations are listed in the report. We have a current fund balance of just over $4.8 million. When you add in the revenues and interest and you take out the cost for previously approved projects, we have a total fund available right now of just over $1.3 million. If this project is fully funded, we would still have a little over $1 million in the park public facility fund. Each year, Parks and Recreation Commission places the most important projects onto its priority project list. This proposed project, excuse me, at the gardens, is on the 2011 Parks and Recreation Commission high priority list. Now, not all the projects on the list are eligible for park public facility fees, but some of those that are on there would include San Miguel Park improvements and expansion, Biddle Park master plan projects, the Santa Margarita to Garden Farms Trail, and Napomo Park master plan projects. And, of course, park and recreation needs emerge, you know, just pretty much nonstop throughout the county. The permits and the process that we've gone through, I mentioned that environmental review was conducted. Actually, it was approved on July 16, 2004, a negative declaration for this project pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act. County Council reviewed Title 18, that's the Public Facility Fee Ordinance, and the related fee financing plan, and finds that the amendment to Chapter 3.3 of the Park Facilities Inventory of the plan through our attached resolution would enable the use of PFF funds for this project. And on January 27th, our Park and Recreation Commission unanimously recommended full funding for this project. There are alternatives for actions, and the first would be for your board to determine an appropriate amount of park funding, park public facility fee funding, to designate. Now, if funding is provided, we have listed four actions that we would like the board's direction on: to approve the attached resolution of findings for use of public facility fees for the subject project and instruct chair to sign, to amend the public facility fund financing plan to include San Luis Obispo Botanical Gardens site as eligible for public facility fee funding, to approve a budget adjustment request of the approved amount into the park fund center 30504 to fund these construction costs and the 6.5% amount for architectural services. That would be required 4/5 vote. And then instruct and authorize the General Services Agency Director to complete and sign a written agreement between General Services Agency and the Friends of San Luis Obispo Botanical Gardens to include all appropriate requirements for use of public funding for this project and to allow the accomplishment of construction inspections, and authorize director to approve the agreement and disbursement of funds. This completes staff's report, and I'm available for questions, and the representatives from the gardens are also here in attendance for the board's questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Black. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Hill. Mr. Black, I'm curious about the list of projects that total the $300,000 request. Does the garden actually have firm bids for these various components of the project? And that's one question. And the other question is, are we guaranteed that we'll be able to get all of these elements completed with the $300,000? And if we don't, what happens? In other words, how will the total project be managed?
Thank you, Supervisor Patterson. These are architects, designers' estimates for the cost, though they did check with some local contractors. They have a number of contractors in their friends group. I know that they'd also have to do public bid, so we can't really say that this will be a hard cost at the moment. Could be a little higher, a little lower by component. We have not established a priority list among these. It certainly could be something we could include in the written agreement with the Friends to establish, should funding come up short, which items would have the highest priorities. There isn't a guarantee that it would all be done for $300,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's something we would like to hear from the garden on as to how we assess the likelihood that all these things are. Is there a priority list? And normally in a county budgeted project, we would have a line for contingencies, because we understand that that's not in the proposal here. And I've got a couple ideas how that might work. Perhaps the garden could provide the necessary contingencies in some way or another. The other thing I wanted to confirm was the status of this facility right now. It is in Chorro Regional Park, and it is a building that is owned by the Friends or owned by the county. What's the exact, just as it sits right now, what's the status of that?
Well, as it sits right now, it's county property. They have the lease for that area, including all the amenities, and having constructed it themselves is a great benefit to the county. Sure. But actually, the property is owned, and all the amenities, fixed assets, are owned by the county.
The building, the land, the whole thing, yeah, is owned by the county, and so it's an operating agreement that has produced remarkable results to date. The question of who's receiving this funding, really the proposal is to make a $300,000 improvement to a county facility. Is that
that's saying? Absolutely correct. It's beyond an operating agreement. It was that until 2004. Now it's actually a lease. So it has a lot of additional rights, but this is a public property. This funding would go to improve the public property, And should at some point the partnership dissolve, the county would retain ownership to whatever is on that land.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, that's all.
Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to clarify that since there is a lease, the improvements that are there that have been constructed by the Botanical Garden are owned by the Botanical Garden pursuant to the lease. However, in the event the lease were terminated, they would revert to county ownership.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Gibson, did you have some questions that you would like to ask?
Well, again, I think there's some things we'd like to hear from the garden when they make their presentation in terms of their certainty of cost estimates and their priority and the contingency question here.
All right. Ms. Scott Graham, are you speaking on behalf of the garden?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman Hill and members of the board for this opportunity to present the gardens. Pete Jenny was going to be part of this presentation, but he has a very bad case of the flu, and he bowed out. So he said to give you his regrets. And so I'll be extemporizing part of what this presentation is about. Why don't I just cut right to the chase about the issue of the contingency if we don't raise the if this $300,000 doesn't cover everything. The garden will raise whatever it takes to finish this. The board has made a commitment to this entire Oakland Pavilion and the area surrounding it. And to date, we have raised just towards this project $205,000 as matching funds to the $300,000. The garden has never failed in its efforts to raise money for this project, and that commitment on the part of the board of directors of the garden is still there. In terms of the priorities of the project, basically, like any construction project, you have to start with the foundation. So that means you think, well, the hardscaping that surrounds the building is an essential component. But we would, of course, before being able to do that, have to do the wiring for the outdoor lighting that's part of this project. That's an $18,000 item. So the priorities are actually imposed, if you will, on the project by the way in which it's constructed. So some of the things like the tiles that would go along various walls, the educational tiles and botanical tiles, those could be, they would be lowest on the priority list in terms of the way the project is constructed. But on the other hand, we feel very strongly that the educational and ornamental components are part of what makes the statement about how unique this landscaping, hardscaping project is. And so we would not, there would be a strong push on the part of the board and the volunteers to raise the money to make sure that we do everything we say that we are going to do. So if that addressed that part of the question and
At a point appropriate, a couple of questions. Ms. Scott Graham, we have the great color version of this.
Yes.
This is the plan that includes all the items that are listed in the staff report.
Correct.
And do we have basic, you know, some basic description of the fountain, of the tiles? I mean, do we know exactly what your plan is at this point for these different
items? Well, I was going to cover a few of those,
okay.
the highlights of
okay.
those. In fact, it would be better if, Curtis, if we could put this one in because it's easier to see than any other questions before I proceed with my prepared? We come to you today to build another link in the 20-year partnership that the Botanical Garden has had with the county. The stewards of the garden, as you know, have set themselves a very visionary goal to complete a 150-acre world-class Mediterranean Botanical Garden. This is a huge project, and when I first returned from being an executive director of a research institute in Maine for 4 years, I was skeptical about the possibility of implementing such a grand vision in San Luis Obispo County. And then I saw what the community had achieved while I was out of the county for 4 years with the Performing Arts Center at Cal Poly and the South County Performing Arts Center. It demonstrated to me personally that it meant that we could raise millions of dollars locally for projects that captured the imagination and the desires of the community. These projects took a total each of 25 years from conception to completion. This project is a much larger project in terms of scope than either of the other projects. But the lesson to be learned is that when this community puts its back to a project, it can make it happen. It's part of what makes us the happiest place in America. The stewards of the Performing Arts Centers did this with a combination of private donations and substantial state and city money, not items which are present within our conceptual framework of how to fund this garden. Until this time, the Botanical Garden has not asked the county for any funding towards the construction of the Oak Glen Pavilion and the surrounding amenities and educational features. During the campaign to raise the funding, we raised millions of dollars in private gifts and two grants of $100,000 each, a Hearst Foundation grant, which was used to fund the drawings of the landscape plan for the hardscape plan, and $100,000 for the Hind Foundation in the form of a challenge grant to cover the construction of our state-of-the-art wastewater treatment system. And I'm sure that Mr. Gibson wishes that he could have hired us to do his project. Good. I'm glad.
I'm not rising to that fly, Liz. I'm not rising to that fly. No. That's right.
Then the Great Recession hit. And in spite of this, we raised an additional $205,000 towards this hardscape and landscaping plan. And we also raised our annual budget of $300,000 a year. So this is an organization that has a great capacity to raise money, but when we got hit with the recession, it obviously impacted us. But we think this is our opportunity to make the next step forward. The Botanical Garden board, volunteers, and donors have taken this project into their hearts and minds and their budgets. But your support today is crucial to our ability to move this project onward, because the hardscaping and the amenities will set the tone for the uniqueness of the vision of this board. It is an essential touchstone to show subsequent donors how visionary our way of telling the story about the plant world is. For example, and now I would draw your attention to the... you guys don't have one of those red laser things?
You indicate the area, I can use a cursor to point.
Okay. Well, why don't you start with the amphitheater Oak Terrace area. Everything on this landscape plan, and this is what makes it totally unique, is we had three charges to our landscape architect. We said we want everything to help the building function better. We want everything to be a teaching tool for the public. And we want, to the extent possible, everything to be artistic. That's a pretty hard set of instructions to give, and we think that our landscape architect has made that. So you can see that there's a tree, and that's the pathways. And that tree, the function of access to the building, will be a concrete that's incised with the different cell structures that make the stems of these and the trunks of these plants. In the back amphitheater, the terrace shows the cross-section of an oak log. And this is where we would teach the public and children about growth rings and what impacts growth rings. The amphitheater itself will seat 250 people, well, 100 people plus another 150 people on the flat part of the oak terrace. The circle over to the side, the two white circles, are cisterns where we will gather the water which will be used to funnel into the fountain. So this is when you ask the question about what's the priorities. We have to run the piping through to get the water from the cisterns to the to that fountain. And what the fountain is an acorn that sits on its tip like this, and the water sheets off the cap. So we won't be using any water that is not collected from the roof. This is a way of demonstrating to the public that you can have a water feature in your garden, but it doesn't have to spend tons of money, water evaporating and money for water, because we'll be collecting it from the roof. The amphitheater, as Curtis said, gets kind of warm some days, even in the winter, sometimes hotter in the winter. One of the unique things that we have is the awning, the retractable awning that Curtis spoke of, will be illustrated on the underside so that we can show people what happens under the ground, the frogs and lizards, and we know that we all love the gophers in our county, those of us who garden, legless lizards, worms, snakes, bees, wasps,
like
all live under the ground. And so this retractable, when you're under the awning and you look up, you'll see this is how we teach people about what's, and it's a work of art at the same time. And we hope to sell lots of napkins in the gift store. But it won't fund this construction project. So those are just some examples of the amenities that will be part of this plan. The garden has been described by a world internationally famous European landscape architect who visited us a few years ago, and he said, when you build this garden, it will be the jewel in the crown of the Moros. And if we will build it according to our master plan, and we all commit and recommit our support for this project. The garden already brings many paying visitors to El Choro Regional Park, and with the publicity that will surround the launch and unveiling of this finished hardscape project, the visitation will only increase. Community members looking for a beautiful site to hold their family events, their reunions, their weddings, we've had numbers of memorial services, will increase, and people will vie to use this space. They already love being inside the building and looking out and seeing all the oak trees. There are not a lot of places where you can have an affordable wedding or family reunion and be in such a beautiful nature space. So the staff report before you amply describes the many benefits that this project will have on visitation by county residents and outsiders. Katie Timoney, the senior editor of Sunset Magazine, has had this presentation, and she indicated to me that they would do a story on this project once it's completed. We have increased our institutional capacity in terms of PR and public relations and outreach to the community through new volunteers who've come on board. And we have the knowledgeable communications and PR people helping with this effort. And heaven forgive me for saying this, but I hope this story will go viral. To finish this story and demonstrate the power of the garden to inspire, the board of directors has just retained the services of a new executive director, Mike Bush, who has directed botanical gardens all over the country and comes to us from a $400 million botanical garden project in Singapore. He was at one point executive director of Lotus Land. So we've made a new commitment to hire an expert person to help us through the next phase of this garden. You are all invited to a reception for Mr. Bush on May 25th from 5:30 to 7, and I'm stepping out of my executive director's position. I will be catering that party, and I would just hope that you would all see fit to come to it. I think that's all my prepared statements, unless anybody has any more questions.
What are you making for that?
We're going to try to do a Mediterranean theme. I just shopped in Berkeley at the Mediterranean stores, getting all kinds of goodies. We probably won't have caviar, though.
Yeah, we're so close.
Okay, Ms. Scott-Graham, we appreciate it. Seeing as there are no questions, perhaps you'd just like to point to all the many supporters and have them raise their hand in support of this.
Would all those people stand up for it, folks?
All right. We thank you. Thanks. For your great support of the garden, and bring it back to the board. And I see no questions, so I'll go to Mr. Gibson, who is lucky enough to have the beautiful garden in his district. I have no public comment, but I do have other folks who want to chime in before Mr. Gibson, unless you wanted to make some further comments. Supervisor Meacham, followed by Supervisor DeShera.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Question for staff in regard to when we talked about County Council reviewing Title 18 and how this amendment relates, can you explain to me exactly how this is changing in terms of Title 18, what the amendment says? I was looking for it in the staff report, and I didn't see it unless I missed it.
Yeah, I don't see it either. If we could take a break, I will consult with the person who did the review.
I think it would be what I'm interested to know is by making the amendment to that title, then what would that constitute for further projects in the future? And I don't know what effect it has, if any, but I'd be curious to know that. The second question I have in regard to the 6.5%. By making this change or on these public facility fees that we allocate for anybody, do we charge that 6.5% straight up no matter what we do, or is it just for construction for a project?
That's for the construction projects that ARC services, and it's an estimate. That gives the amount they would typically use. This project may use less because a lot of the engineering work was done when they did the building. But that's an approximate of project oversight management costs.
Okay. That's good for now.
Mr. Gibson?
And could I just confirm basically that overhead amount is the construction management? There isn't a line for construction management, but ARC services can handle that.
That's true. The estimate provided by the Friends didn't include any county costs. So these would be strictly county costs to review plans, go out, walk the site, make sure it's constructed as planned.
Okay. Mr. Jensen, how much time do you need to answer Mr. Meacham's question?
10 minutes or so.
Okay, then I guess we will take a break for 10 minutes until we get the answer and then come back.
You're live.
Okay. If you could be so kind to have a seat, we will get back into our hearing. Boisterous gardeners all.
Yeah, that gardener crowd. You know.
Yeah.
Watch
that.
And we will go to our county council to address Mr. Meacham's question, if you could. Mr. Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Warren Jensen, the county council. I've looked into this. It turns out that we have the Public Facility Fee Ordinance, which is Title 18. And then outside of the ordinance, we have the financing plan, which has been approved from time to time and amended by the board by resolution. In this case, what we have is on agenda item D1, page 25, is the resolution. And you'll notice that paragraph 1 of the operative provision says funding for the landscape and hardscape improvements, et cetera, is added to the public facilities financing plan. And that's where the change to the plan is made by the proposed ordinance. And we believe that's sufficient.
So this doesn't have any impact in terms of a precedence by which others will be applying?
No, no.
Okay, I thought everybody needed to get up and stand up and stretch anyway.
Yeah. Okay, further questions before we go to comments. Mr. Patterson, do you have questions?
Comment.
Okay, Mr. Teixeira, did you want to make some comments? Okay, since I think we're done with questions, why don't we go to Mr. Patterson and then Mr. Teixeira with comments.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Hill. Seen this project grow from the initial preview garden that they started with and a little arbor that was the entryway into the garden, and now we have the education center and a variety of other things that have been constructed over the years. And the garden board members and others have been very successful in soliciting support from the community to get these things done, and it's amazing. I think what Ms. Scott Graham said about her confidence in the community's ability to really develop the garden into a world-class venue. is realistic. And I just wanted to mention, too, that the connecting link, the missing piece between the preview garden area and where you're going through the Celebration of Life garden and then over into the Education Center and the administrative part of the garden, the Fire Safe Council just appropriated a grant to the Botanical Garden to put in a firescape demonstration landscape, and we'll begin that project and hopefully have that piece of the pathway between the two developed elements that are there now completed by October, at least the initial piece of that. And so knowing the extent of the support that the garden has in the community and with other agencies and the partnerships that have been created over the years, I'm quite confident that the success will continue, and I am supportive of this funding.
Thank you. Mr. Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. As a past Parks Commissioner, I've had a bird's-eye view to be out at the Botanical Gardens in many instances. It's been my pleasure to be out there, and just this last week we were out there for a reception, and it's remarkable the things that they've done over the tenure that they've been there. And I take my hat off to the Botanical Garden staff, which is mostly or all volunteer, the people that support it. I, too, support this measure, as Mr. Patterson stated, but for a different reason. Early on, I was the guest of Liz Scott Graham and my friend Pandora Nash Cardner to go out there. And there's very few, if any, places in this county that you have that magical feeling when you're there. And the Botanical Garden is one of them. The other one that I see that way is the Dan Adobe. And you go out there, and there's just something about it that it makes you feel good. It's a pleasant place to be. There's all kinds of nice things there. And I just think it's a great gem for the people of San Luis County and this area. And I, too, will be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I echo comments of my colleagues here. This truly is a unique partnership that has done remarkable things in a unique place. It you'd referenced earlier that it happens to sit in the second district, but it is clearly of countywide importance, and I believe in time, statewide and even, dare we say, worldwide significance as the plans continue to evolve out there. This unique partnership, you know, as we work on investing in county parks system, certainly the match with the amount of time, effort, and indeed dollars that the Friends of Botanical Garden have already put in, the $300,000 of public facilities fees, the first direct county money going in here has been leveraged already at a remarkable rate. And I think that looking forward, as we know, operations being again one of the pinch points of our efforts to provide programs, we have a great and proven group who are going to carry this into the future. So I see a lot of potential and almost no downside here. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we approve the funding in the amount of $319,500,000 out of our public facility fee accounts, indeed approve the resolution, amended slightly with a question here after we get to discussion, and move forward with staff's recommendations under the item of if funding is approved.
I'll second.
Okay. And the one thing is we looked at the resolution and back on page D-125, the second line in the resolved indicates that funding for said project is established not to exceed $300,000, and I wonder whether we should amend that to $319,500. Yeah. So we could add, just to make sure, I know General Services wants their due here. So I would make that motion with that amendment to the resolution.
Second by Supervisor Patterson, with no further discussion. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Thank you.
It's time to get to work.
Yeah. Put your clothes on.
Can we go home now?
And by the way, we have we definitely have made it a matter of our record that we have to deal with the bus situation on that side of Los Osos. Of Osos.
All right. An ovation. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item while our happy gardeners exit?
Item C1, a hearing to consider a resolution amending the Urban County of San Luis Obispo Program Year 2006, 2007, and 2009 Action Plans, reallocating Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, funds, all districts.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Navarro.
Good morning, Chairman Hill and members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tony Navarro with County Planning and Building. And today I have before you the amendments of various action plans at the request of various cities who are members of the urban county and the county department and the county. I'll start a very short presentation. As I mentioned, there's a request by the cities, including Grover Beach, Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, and the county to amend these action plans. And most of the projects deal with reallocation of funds for American Disabilities Act projects in Grover Beach and Paso Robles, and also affordable housing in the city of San Luis Obispo, by the city of San Luis Obispo. The county requests reallocation of some program income that the county received within the last year that must be reallocated, and the planning is recommending to the board to allocate about $7,000 to the minor home repair program administered by the Community Action Partnerships of San Luis Obispo, but also $35,000 of that program income to allocations in the North County Connection for property acquisition in the city of Atascadero for them to acquire the site where they currently have their facilities and establish a capital campaign plan and hopefully within the next year acquire that site. That's basically my presentation today on this item. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Navarro. I see no board member questions, so let me open it up unless I did see a board member. I see a board member.
I'll wait.
Okay. Let me open it up to the public. I have two requests to speak on this one, C1. Susan Warren, followed by Sandra Knapp.
Good morning again, board. I just wanted to say how grateful we are with the staff, the county planning. Supervisor Patterson has been working with us on this project. We didn't expect to have to dive into this project this soon. The landlords have worked with us. In fact, they asked us to come and be on this particular piece of property. It's worked out exceptionally well for us there. In helping people, we have many more people coming than when we were located in the downtown in the middle of everything going on. And this property acquisition, though, will allow us to write for more grants. There's more grants for operating if you own the property. And we are working with the city, Councilman Bob Kelly, who happens to be in our neighborhood, who has watched us grow over the years, and he's very, very supportive and is working with us, as is Supervisor Patterson, has been working with us also, and especially the staff, Tony Navarro and also Dana Lilly, have all been working with us for years in how we might be able to accomplish this. And unfortunately, this year we got a timeline given to us. And staff has been very diligent, and everybody's jumped in to help us. We look so forward to coming back here and having a project that can rival the botanical gardens. Is something very special and unique to our county. We hope to expand the resources that we can offer. And the grounds that we're on, have them be a real showcase, not only in our program, but in our grounds and what we can offer.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Ms. Knapp's going to speak on the next item, so that's the only request I have to speak on this item. I'll close it to public comment, bring it back to the board. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up with Ms. Warren's comment. This is an opportunity to help North County Connection continue their services, much needed services throughout the North County. They do good work, and I want to also thank staff, Mr. Navarro, Mr. Lilly, and Mr. Stevenson, for setting that money aside to give North County Connection some seed money to operate with to purchase that facility so they don't lose the opportunity to continue providing their services. So I just wanted to thank everybody for that effort. And okay, any other comments? If not, I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Patterson, second by Supervisor Gibson, with no other discussion. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes. Okay. Could you please introduce the next item, Madam Clerk?
Next item is C2, a hearing to consider a request to select activities for funding under the 2011 Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, Home Investment Partnership Act, HOME, and Emergency Solutions Grant, ESG programs, and approve the resolution authorizing submittal of the Urban County of San Luis Obispo Program Year 2011 Action Plan of the San Luis Obispo Consolidated Plan to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, all districts.
Thank you. Mr. Navarro.
Thank you. Once again, Tony Navarro, Department of Planning and Building. And today concludes this is the final hearing for the approval of the 2011 Action Plan for submittal to the Department of Housing and Urban Development by the 15th of this month. Now, I have to go into a little bit of this. There have been some issues with the allocations since the federal government did not approve their budget until very recently, and the county received a funding estimate from HUD, from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And so there were some cutbacks to the CDBG program, as I have in my PowerPoint presentation, a 16.6% cutback, which is about $375,000 cutback to the overall urban county allocation, but also for home, 12.2%, but an increase in emergency solutions grant, which that used to be called emergency shelter grant, but now the government's going with a different name here. There is an increase on that funding. But one thing I will let you know that I will be coming back to the board possibly in June because the cities have not had time to reconsider what they've already approved. And so we'll come back with those numbers. Some cities have elected to authorize their city manager to make that decision. One city will have to go back to its respective city council to make a decision, and I will be back before your board to clean up the numbers for final submittal to HUD. Speaking of cleaning up, there was one note, a correction to Exhibit A. Let me find the page.
C211. Last item.
Item 13 on item C2-11, page 11, for Madam Clerk, the sentence that reads under evaluations is the staff does not recommend funding for the program. Actually, if we can just strike out that sentence, but staff does recommend the funding in the amount of $17,194 for the minor home program under the 2011 program year. I'll carry.
I think she got it.
So with the reduction of the CDBG program, the numbers for the cities work out, as I have indicated here, for the county itself, it's just under $700,000, which is about $138,000 less than we had anticipated up until April 22nd. So the county's numbers in here do reflect that allocation of $693,000 I will not have to come back to make adjustments to that, but the city numbers will change. Really, very briefly on CDBG national objectives, each project must benefit low and moderate income people or prevent or eliminate slums and blight or meet an emergency community needs, which we hope we never have to do. That's really in case of a natural disaster, we can use CDBG funds to eliminate those emergencies. Under public services, we have three recommendations to your board to fund the Prado Day Center, the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, and the El Camino Homeless Organization. And there is a 15% cap on the allocation of those funds. So those numbers reflect our cap. Under economic development activities, the North Mission Community Services Corporation for $25,000 approximately for technical assistance to small businesses and startup businesses. Hopefully we're looking at job generation there, but also building stronger businesses and be able to compete out there in the business world. And also to the Economic Vitality Corporation for about $34,000 for loan guarantees, which do generate new jobs. Under public facilities, we have three projects that we're recommending to your board. A very important project is the Oceano Drainage Improvements on Highway 1 and Paso Robles Street at $190,000. And there are matching funds from Caltrans and other sources, so that's an important drainage project for the entire community there. Also, the 16th Street sewer line replacement in San Miguel, we're recommending $138,000, and that funding amount did not go down because of the importance of that funding figure to the San Miguel Community Services District. We felt that funding amount should not be touched, and so that's our recommendation. But also to replace water and sewer system at the Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park in Los Osos, that funding request, since it is a small number, we're recommending that that number not be reduced. But all other numbers were reduced accordingly to the new allocation figures that we've received. Under housing, the Minor Home Program by CAPSLO, which we've sort of touched on a little bit here, $17,000, but also the same amount, $17,194 for grid alternatives, which they'll be installing solar panels at homes that are occupied by or owned by low-income families. And then we have the Homeless Management Information System, and the $15,000 that we're recommending is a match for the HMIS system, which helps track homeless individuals in the county and services, but also $1,000 for fair housing activities by the California Rural Legal Assistance, and then our program administration at $122,000. Under the home program, our allocation is about $1.2 million, and we're really recommending here pretty much two projects plus administration. The Cortland Affordable Housing Project in Arroyo Grande, that came before the board last year. We were not able to fund $1.5 million worth of funding requests in 1 year. So we're coming back this next year to complete that funding request so that the project could compete at the state level for tax credits in June. And also, the city of San Luis Obispo is putting together in lieu fees, affordable housing fees, to acquire the 313 South Street property in San Luis Obispo for the eventual development of affordable housing. And then we have program administration for the home program. The good news here is that we did have an increase in the emergency shelter grant program, actually now called Emergency Solutions Grant. And as some of you board members may recall, the eligible organizations for the ESG funds, they get together and they decide how to divide up these funds, and we pass that recommendation along to the board. And what I did was just increase the numbers accordingly to the percentage that we, to the percentage numbers that we were given by the organization. So we have Maxine Lewis at almost 49,000, Prado Day Center 28,000, Echo about 20,000, and so forth. The two women's shelters at almost 10,000, and North County Women's Shelter at 19,000. And with that, I'm going to conclude my presentation, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Navarro. Seeing as there's no board questions at this time, I'll open up to the public. I have several requests to speak, so let's get to them. Ms. Knapp, followed by Mr. Montemiro.
Thank you, Board of Supervisors. My name is Sandra Knapp. I'm an outreach coordinator for the Central Coast Office for Great Alternatives. And what we do is we're a nonprofit organization that installs free photovoltaic systems for qualified low-income families. We do whatever we can to keep the costs down and provide these systems at no cost to the families. We are specifically serving the low-income housing community exclusively. We've created a partnership with People's Self-Help Housing and are directing our efforts to those homeowners in the communities that have worked with the People's Self-Help Housing Mutual Self-Help Program. So basically, I'm fishing in a pond that I know has fish. We, on a statewide level, are also working with job trainees and workforce development folks. They are a key component to our volunteer aspect of how we install the systems. We use a barn-raising model where we get workforce development folks, job trainees, and the homeowners themselves to roll up their sleeves and get up on the roof and make solar happen for families that otherwise wouldn't be able to afford it. We've surveyed all of our volunteers statewide. We've trained over 6,000, and a quarter of those volunteers have said that volunteering with Great Alternatives has helped them get a job in the solar economy in this state. Our statewide impact and our regional impacts are significant. We just hit 2 megawatts of installed solar in the state. We are planning to install another 83 systems in the unincorporated areas of the county. We are also working with the cities. We've already installed 5 systems in Napomo. We've done 3 in Templeton. We've got another 46 families coming out of San Miguel. So there's great impact, so we appreciate your consideration and your time in reviewing our request for this allocation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knapp. Thank you for the good work that you do. Mr. Montemiro, followed by Patty Herrera. And again, I apologize for mixing you up earlier.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak, and no problem as far as the mix-up. I'm here. First of all, my name is Rafael Montemuro, and I have the pleasure of being the general manager for the Oceano Community Service District. So I would like to special thanks to Mr. Tony Navarro. I've worked with him at great lengths, and he understands the need that we have in Oceano, and I'm very pleased with his recommendation. He has asked earlier that we get $400,000 for project number 3, which is an improvement to flooding on Highway 1 and 13th Street in Oceano. And then earlier on page 51 of the draft, I was really excited because it said that we were going to get $284,995. Now, as a result of the 16% cut, we're going to get $190,840. I want to thank everybody for that. But I would ask if, please, like, for example, you know, it is State Highway 1, so if we could get any kind of matching funds from the state or elsewhere, because this is one of the few projects that's going to benefit every resident in Oceano. And, you know, you have a very difficult job. I know I've sat in those big shoes as a county board supervisor, and it's always the same scenario. You have a huge need in your community, in the county in which you work, and yet the resources are always limited. So this is the type of stuff that CDBG was made for, because every resident in Oceano will benefit if we help the flooding, plus not to mention just the people that live there, but the people that drive through Oceano, both up and down Highway 1, going to Pismo, what all the things that happen over there, going south towards Napomo. So it will really be a big benefit to the county as a whole. And, you know, for that
we would ask a little more consideration. As far as the district itself, we realize it's a problem, but we don't have the funding. It'll help, for example, if there's improvements made. Presently, we get calls. We have to send the staff out often on overtime. You know, it doesn't ever seem to rain or flood at a convenient time when the water utility department is at work. It always seems to flood or storm, you know, on holidays or evenings or whatever. Then we have to call up the staff, send them out there, get sandbags, all kinds of stuff. And we can, you know, very, very limited budget. So I would ask that you please vote for this funding and please look anywhere if we can get any more funding. At the end, I also want to thank Mr. Pavo and the Public Works for, you know, recommending this because they know we need it. And hopefully with Tony's help and Pavo and your gentleman's help, we can get additional money. I would like to have enough money that we can start and finish the problem. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Herrera followed by Laura Mohaher. I'm going to probably mispronounce it, but you'll correct me.
Good morning. My name is Patty Herrera, and I am the Community Benefits Outreach Coordinator for French Medical Center. As a non-for-profit hospital, one of our core missions is to provide health care to the neediest in our community. One of the fastest rising costs of health care is medication, and many of our residents in our community cannot afford them. French Hospital is collaborating with Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access, also known as APA, to help alleviate the financial burden of the patients we treat in our hospital and in our community. French Hospital will be donating office space to APA starting July 1st of this year. APA is committed to provide access to prescribed medication at no cost to residents with chronic medical conditions who do not have the resources to buy them in order to manage and maintain their health. APA has trained staff that is ready to help any client through the often confusing process of applying an online application for these resources. APA staffs are masters of untangling the massive web. APA's presence in our community will improve access for critically needed medication and will increase the quality of life. Your CBG grant will represent and present initial seed money and support for APA in the city of San Luis Obispo. It will help create community awareness of services, and it will also expand its network of community supporters. Thank you for your support and consideration in allocating these funds to this life-giving program. Thank you.
Thank you. And let me let you pronounce your name correctly.
Thank you very much. The Honorable Board of Supervisors, Mr. Chairman, my name is Laura Mohajer,
okay.
And I am the Executive Director of the Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access. I want to thank you for the opportunity to apply for the CDBG funding at the county level and also in its strategically located jurisdictions where APA intends to establish its satellite offices in Arroyo Grande Community Hospital and also San Luis Obispo French Hospital Medical Center. I also want to thank the staff at the county level and also at each of their jurisdictions for providing guidance in the process. The Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access provides access to medication at no cost to individuals that do not have the funds, are uninsured or underinsured. They are the working poor. They are the homeless. They are the most in need. There are individuals that need to make a decision whether they should pay for their food or their medications, whether they should pay for their shelter, for housing, or for their medications, and most of the times they forego their health and the opportunity to take care of themselves and or their family members. The Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access submitted an application to the County of San Luis Obispo as it intends to expand its services. APA has provided services to the San Luis Obispo County residents since its inception. We need to be more accessible. And for that purpose, as of July 1, we will establish our residence here.
currently operates from Marion Medical Center. San Luis Obispo County did not recommend us for funding at this time. The city of Arroyo Grande has recommended $1,000, and under the CDBG, the city of San Luis Obispo did not make a recommendation for funding due to the limitations, of course, and although they found merit as far as the APA program, they did recommend the city of San Luis Obispo funding under their grants and aids program. The Gerber Beach as well, they found merit for APA services, and they invited us back for next year. I would like to share with you the plans that APA has, and that is to serve 350 individuals at each San Luis Obispo South County and then a North County. So that would be about 700 in the program year 2011-2012. So your support is requested in finding funds, if possible, for its establishment here in San Luis Obispo. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mahajer. And finally, Lori Angelo.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Lori Angelo. I'm current president of the Oceano Community Services District in Oceano. And I do want to thank Tony for his work on a lot of various projects that go on within our community. I do appreciate the funds that are going to be allocated for the flooding area. However, we did have two other items that were on here scheduled to possibly be approved, were both denied for any funding. And it would be great to be able to get a little more funding so we can complete the project. If not, we'll take what we can get, and perhaps we'll be able to work with maybe the state or the railroad sections to see about additional funding to help complete the project as well. So if any of you have any ideas for me, something new that we haven't tried yet, it would be greatly appreciated. In the meantime, we're going to continue looking to fund some of these items, mostly our streets and our water problems that we do have, since this year we've been hit with a lot. If there's anything that we can do to sway a little more funds to come into our community, I would be more than happy to talk to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That will close it for public comment, and I'll bring it back to the board. I didn't know if Mr. Navarro had any specific responses he wanted to provide. Mr. Navarro?
Not at this time, unless the board members.
So let me go to my board members. Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Navarro, I'm looking at the allocations here that you've recommended, and I'm curious about the. Let me be sure I find them. We have the grid program that Ms. Knapp spoke about, and that's on 18. Well, it should be. I did have it here.
Page 18.
Okay. Is that? Right, and that's what I wanted to look at. I was looking for grid on the first set of tables, and I had it there. They requested $3,000, I think, and there was recommendation to not fund that. Am I looking at the right one? Okay, and they were recommended for funding.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
And then the other question I have under the various funding categories, CDBG, home, and ESG, you've broken them down into different categories. For example, housing, public services, and so forth. Can you move outside of those categories with the same funding like CDBG, or does it have to be allocated within those categories?
Well, with CDBG, it does have to fall into certain categories. I mean, that's where they fit
right.
for eligibility purposes that we identify in the action plan.
Okay, so any revisions we might want to make, do they have to stay within those categories as long as it's CDBG funding?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I have at the moment.
Okay. Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tony, I just wanted to raise once again, I know we've discussed this a little bit, the Oak Park redevelopment phase one. I'm hoping that in the future that we can find some way to accommodate that. This is a project that, matter of fact, I recommended to the board or the council 10 years ago, and now we've finally got to a point where they've established a plan. And the concern is from a safety standpoint there. I mean, we've seen a deteriorating infrastructure from water, gas, sewer, especially the sewer system. And I know that the city of Paso Robles has, out of the redevelopment funds, put over $1 million into this. And we're looking at state and federal assistance as well. So my hope is that this kind of rises to the top in the future. And I know you've been in discussion with them. So I appreciate the explanation that you gave me and talking with those folks.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Okay. Thank you.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Meacham, seconded by Supervisor Gibson. Seeing no further questions, and thank Mr. Navarro and all of the folks involved in putting this together. Madam Clerk, could we have a roll call?
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Okay, that concludes our morning business, I believe, unless I'm mistaken. So I will open it to closed session. I have no request to speak on closed session, so I will close it to the public on closed session and go to Mr. Jensen for a time estimate.
20 minutes.
Beautiful. Okay, we will be back at 1:30. Thank you.
You're live.
Okay. Welcome back. Let's check to see if we have a report out of closed session. Mr. Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Warren Jensen, County Council. The board did meet in closed session. No reportable action was taken.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Before we get into our presentation, I wanted to go over to our Assistant Planning Director, Ms. Griffin, about item C4, I guess it would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. We did receive a letter requesting withdrawal of the appeal of C4, so you won't have to take any additional action today.
Okay. Just wanted to give people a heads up to that, and I appreciate it. Okay. With that, I would entertain a motion on the presentation calendar here.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Meacham. Roll call vote, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Okay, let me begin. It's my honor to make a proclamation of this month as Mental Health Awareness Month. I see Jill Bolster-White. I don't know if you are going to be joined at the lectern by others, but I'll read this and be happy to hand it out, and you guys can comment. Whereas mental health is essential to everyone's overall health and well-being, and whereas with effective treatment, those individuals with mental health conditions can recover and lead full, productive lives, and whereas the social stigma that surrounds mental illness often creates a barrier for people seeking and receiving mental health services, and whereas the peer advisory and advocacy team, PAAT, PAT, I guess, right? Okay, is a committee of peers who have lived experience with mental health conditions and work to advocate for those served by the mental health system, educate our community, promote wellness and recovery, reduce stigma, and provide support for those living with a mental illness. And whereas each business, school, government agency, and healthcare provider, organization, and citizen shares the burden of mental health problems and has a responsibility to promote mental wellness and support prevention efforts. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May 2011 as Mental Health Awareness Month and calls upon the citizens, government agencies, public and private institutions, businesses and schools in San Luis Obispo County to recommit our community to increasing awareness and understanding of mental health, the steps our citizens can take to protect their mental health, and the needs for appropriate accessible services for all people with mental health conditions. So if you would come and accept this resolution.
Will be Daryl Elliott from the PAT team and Transitions to Mental Health Association.
Excellent. Okay. But you want to pose for a picture here? Looks like we have cameras. It's okay, no problem.
It's the gentleman part.
Okay, feel free to. We have
Chairman Hill. I'm Frank Warren with San Luis Obispo yes. County Behavioral Health Department. And before I introduce Daryl, I wanted to just acknowledge that to effectively serve the mental health issues of our community, it takes great partnerships. And we certainly at the county level have tremendous partnerships. And on display here today is some of that partnership, of course, with organizations like NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and our longstanding partners, Transitions Mental Health Association. You've already acknowledged Jill Bolster-White here. So I'm very proud to introduce one of our partners from that community, Daryl Elliott, a member of the PAT team and Transitions Mental Health Association, to say a few words. So thank you again for doing the proclamation for us.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Frank. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Daryl, and I work at Transitions Mental Health Association as the PAT coordinator, which stands for Peer Advisory and Advocacy Team Coordinator. PAT was created in 2008 to work together with our communities, the mental health departments of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties, as well as with Transitions Mental Health Association. It was formed as a committee of consumers and peers to better the system for those who have a mental illness. We educate and advocate to the community about mental illness and also work to eliminate the stigma attached to mental illness. And one of the ways we do this is through stamp out stigma presentations where we share personal experiences of living with mental illness, relating our own experience of stigma and how we have worked to change the negative societal perceptions. Another way we do this is by hosting PAT forums like the Journey of Hope Forum, which was held here at the County Board of Supervisors last year, as well as the upcoming Walk for Wellness with collaboration with NAMI on May 21st at Mitchell Park. Our committee currently has 15 members and is open to anyone that would like to attend. We have meetings on the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month from 4 to 5 p.m. at Transitions Mental Health. My own personal journey to the PAT team was started by participating in transitions programs as a person living with mental illness. I attended socialization programs, supportive employment classes, and meetings like peer-to-peer and RAP. I was also in their housing program as well. In 2009, I became an employee of Transitions Mental Health as a PAT coordinator, and through that experience and position, I have been able to attend numerous meetings and trainings which have enabled me to learn more and take back valuable information to the PAT team. And being the PAT coordinator has been a very rewarding experience and a big part of my continued recovery. The PAT team and I greatly appreciate your time and effort in issuing this proclamation and your continued support of mental health services in our community. This proclamation is important because research shows that 1 in 4 persons live with a mental illness. So today you have helped raise awareness and reduce stigma surrounding mental illness in our community, and we thank you so much for your time this afternoon. At this time, I would like to recognize our PAT team and have them stand up. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all the good work that you do. Supervisor Meacham will read the next one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my honor to read the resolution proclaiming May 19th, 2011 as World Viral Hepatitis Awareness Day. Is Elena Rodriguez, is she here? Do you want to come to the lectern, ma'am? The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas liver cancer and liver disease related to hepatitis B and C is one of the leading killers in the state of California, and early detection of hepatitis B or hepatitis C infection promotes effective management or treatment of these infections, prevent disability, loss of productivity and income, and allow persons to live full, satisfying and productive lives. And whereas undetected and untreated hepatitis B or C infection can lead to disability or death, and untreated hepatitis B and hepatitis C is a leading cause of liver failure requiring a liver transplant. And there is a vaccine for the prevention of hepatitis B, the first proven low-cost vaccination against any form of cancer made available to Americans. And whereas the SLO Hep C project has enrolled 715 clients in their supportive service program who are living with hepatitis C, providing over 7,316 face-to-face case management activities and 147,547 meals from their pantry. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors is hereby proclaim May 19, 2011, as World Viral Hepatitis Awareness Day in San Luis Obispo County.
For a photo, I think you're. Yeah. Photo op. We'll have Debbie Arnold join us here from Senator Blakesley's office.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to say a few words, please.
Much of what I'd planned to say has already been stated in what you read. Wanted to reiterate the amount of people that were able to help with the support of the community. And how much prevention can really help a lot of people. So getting the awareness out there to people, getting the education in our services is tremendous. So I thank you very much for supporting us.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thanks very much, folks. We really appreciate you being here today. Okay, as our staff is...
David Kilburn with the Slow Hep C Project also. At the same time right now, the reason that a representative from Senator Blakesley's office is here is Senator Blakesley is also introducing on the state level Senate Resolution 35, which is just taking this awareness to the state level and hopefully getting more awareness out there in the community.
Okay.
So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, it gave us time for staff to get into position. Madam Clerk, if you would introduce the first item of the afternoon, the only item I think we have now.
Item C3, a hearing to consider a request by the county to amend sections 22.22, 22.24, and 22.26 of the Land Use Ordinance, Title 22 of the County Code, the Transfer of Development Credits, TDC program, to delete obsolete standards and make modifications to the sending and receiving site criteria and require the use of credits for general plan amendments in rural subdivisions, 1st, 3rd, 4th, and 5th districts.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is a recommendation from the Planning Commission, which is how you receive ordinance amendments. The Planning Commission did recommend approval of these amendments, and Karen Nall is the project manager, and she will make your presentation today.
Just before Ms. Nall gets in, Cami, the vote on that, do you recall? Was it in?
It was a 4-1 vote.
4-1 vote. Thank you. Great. I'm sorry. Ms. Nall.
Good afternoon. Karen Nall with the Planning Division, and like Cami indicated, we're here for a general plan amendment on the relating to the Transferable Development Credit Program. A little history, your board created a TDC Blue Ribbon Committee back in 06. That committee worked long and hard for 2 years and put together a final report, which is included in your packet, which begins on page C-3-109. Some of the recommendations of that report are included as amendments, recommended amendments today. We coined them phase one being little fixes to the program, which is what we're here for today. Phase two recommendations from that Blue Ribbon Committee would be a major overhaul of the program. It would include mapped receiving sites, mapped sending sites, and more of a land banking type of program. But your board authorized this phase one back in March of 2009. We've since brought it to the Planning Commission just in January, And these are the amendments that are before you today. The first has to deal with sending sites. This amendment would limit any new sending sites to community-based program areas, and currently there are two, one in the South County area and one in the South Atascadero area. Here's a map of South County Inland Planning Area. That is the same area that is considered the South County community-based plan. And then the South Atascadero plan includes all of South Atascadero beyond the city limits of Atascadero, two garden farms. It's all the remaining colony lots that are not within the city of Atascadero. And then the second set of amendments that are proposed today have to deal with receiving sites. Again, this is ratcheting down the program to limit any new receiving sites to be within urban or village reserve lines, or to be within those two community-based program areas, the South County or Atascadero. The committee also recommended some modifications to the TDC program to provide additional uses for credits. One would be for general plan amendments. This is for property owner initiated general plan amendments that would be proposed to increase density, and the theory there would be to require TDCs for that upzoning and increase in density. And then the last amendment is one we're getting a little interest in, and it is requiring rural subdivisions to purchase a credit. This would be for any conforming rural subdivision to require credit. They would not be considered receiving sites, but credits would be required. The ordinance does have some exception rules in it that can be granted by the review authority if the credits are deemed unnecessary or there's special circumstances. Also, the number of credits could be reduced. So with that, again, the Planning Commission did recommend that your board adopt these amendments. I have a little typo on the recommendation. The recommendation should be Exhibit D is actually the ordinance for your adoption. Exhibit A is the strikeout and underline version. So just to make that correction, and then that ends my presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Nall. I have some questions here. Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, and I apologize. I was reading something quickly while you were going over the first part of your presentation. Did I hear you say that this is a phased proposal that that the Blue Ribbon Committee is submitting? This is the first phase of this?
Well, we coined it that just to kind of break down the recommendations of the Blue Ribbon Committee. We called it phase one because those were easy fixes, things that we could do to the existing program. The phase two would be a major overhaul of the program.
But I one of the big questions that I have in all of this is, if it's coming in phase two, is the mapping of potential sites, is that what we're going to be doing in this?
Well, your board has not authorized any work to be done on the phase two. They ask us, and Cami can jump in too, you ask that we come back with some funding or cost estimates. We've received some, and they're extremely expensive. But getting back to your question, that was part of the recommendation, is that there's more of a relationship between a sending and receiving site, that the receiving sites be mapped so people are aware that they're within an area that could receive credits.
Okay. I mean, this part of this seems like kind of a departure from what the initial intent of this, when it talks about this program is voluntary, incentive-based, and market-driven. This is no longer going to be a voluntary, this is proposed not to be a voluntary effort.
The one amendment that's before you today is not voluntary. It would require TDC credits for rural subdivisions.
Okay.
I guess one of the big concerns that I have with this is it appears to me if we're trying to somehow harness the antiquated subdivisions that are out there, that we have a lot of land out there that is unantiquated subdivisions, and we take that out of the opportunity for a sending site, if you will, it seems to me that that's contrary to what we're trying to accomplish, although I don't support the smart growth in its entirety, the smart growth policies.
Well, let me ask a couple of things, and I know my colleagues want to join in too. My understanding, you know, the Blue Ribbon Commission, Karen, met 33 times, maybe an endurance record. Didn't agree on a lot of things, but certainly one of the things that they seem to all agree with is that rural sprawl, rural development, is much costlier to the county, i.e., the government, the taxpayer, than other forms of development. And is that the originating sense of this portion?
Of that one portion requiring the rural subdivisions to buy credit, yes. That was one thing that this group actually agreed upon, was they coined it the cost of sprawl. There's a couple other phrases that were coined, but that was basically the idea. And also finding other uses for credits because
right.
of the neighborhoods that were getting hit with many, like south of Tascadero, who came up with their own community-based plan.
Mm-hmm.
It was finding other ways to use these credits that are still out there.
Right. And if I could, because I think this is important, you know, if you look at it from let's use the word conservative, the idea here is that you're conserving a certain part of our county, which is much more part of the rural character, and also being conservative in the amount of money we commit at the governmental level to services, and our services, particularly fire and sheriff's department and all sorts of other things. I mean, that's the understanding in terms of the costs.
Right, the rural, yeah.
Yeah.
And cost of sprawl.
And if I could ask Mr. McNulty a question, I know he just arrived, but I think he's always alert. My understanding, for instance, there have been many studies on the cost of sprawl and the cost of developing further out of the urban envelopes and what those costs are. The county cannot, for instance, say to a developer or even a single home builder who wants to build in a distant rural area that we can set fees much higher than we have them to offset the amount of money we would have to pay for that more distant subdivision, am I right? Meaning that we essentially don't have the ability to say to a developer or some builder, well, if you want to build all the way out there, you're going to have to pay 10 times as much as it would to build and acquire urban services, which is much more cost effective.
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. You've got a couple of existing fee programs, one for roads and one for public facilities. The roads program generally only applies within your urban core areas. We've got those identified geographically, and people are required to pay the fee that's in effect at the time that they come forward with a building permit in that particular area. The public facilities fee is a little different in that it applies countywide. Now, if we identified a situation where someone was attempting to put something really intense pretty far away so that we could document well that additional services would be required, the only way that we could effectively impose an additional requirement would be to try to take advantage of the development agreement statute that exists in the government code. And through that, you can indeed exceed what would otherwise be allowed by virtue of the nexus and the burden created by the project. We haven't done that here in our county. We don't have a development agreement ordinance. We haven't used that statute. So I would say at the current time, you're correct. We probably wouldn't have the ability to deal with a great impact imposed by something that was being proposed far away from the urban center.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify.
Although, having said that, we just put 158 or 59 conditions on a solar project.
And the
SunPower project, which you did indeed put those conditions on, didn't require any additional development impact fee. It didn't require any additional road fee. What we did do there was to identify the fact that the project was going to bring in sales and use tax, and we had the applicant agree to enter into agreements with its contractors that required the locus for the payment of those taxes to be in our county, so that we would receive the benefit of those taxes when they were paid. And the fiscal study that we did attempted to document and did document that if those sales taxes came in as we anticipated they would, that it would equal or indeed exceed the additional cost of providing the services over the life of the project. So that's the way we approached that particular project, and that's the way the Topaz project is also being approached.
And a big part of that is because these projects are exempt from property tax. I mean, in terms of our thinking of ensuring the financial arrangement.
That's right. There was no dispute that those projects create a huge additional burden on services, and they will, especially with regard to sheriff services and CDF services. But they had studies, which we were able to independently verify, that indicated that if we got these sales tax agreements, we would come out whole. And in the event that we don't, those conditions, or at least the one on the SunPower project, requires a cash payment at the end of 3 years, I believe, 3 or 4 years. So we'll know at that time whether or not we received the anticipated sales tax, and if we don't, they've agreed to pay.
So, okay. I'm going to let that go for now.
Okay. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to stay on that subject for just a minute because I think council answered in the specific at the current situation, but it my understanding of land use regulation and environmental mitigation is that if we can establish the nexus of an impact to county services or the community or the environment, if we can establish a nexus that depends on distance from an urban center, we can, with nexus and proportionality, structure a fee system that could very well charge more for more distant subdivision or any kind of development than for closer in subdivision.
That's correct. And I think you could do it on an ad hoc basis, or you could do it as part of an ordinance that would attempt to address those things. We don't have that in place now.
We don't have that structure, but it does depend on nexus. And I think what you quoted, Mr. Chairman, that varieties of studies and a variety of jurisdictions have shown the cost of rural sprawl and have taken means to address an appropriate scaled impact fee that accounts for all the impacts that such a development might incur. I didn't know if staff was done with their report, but at some point in the discussion, I think it's useful to come back to the intent and our direction of March of 2009, which was very explicitly to make more restrictive the current TDC ordinance, because we had found unanticipated problems, unanticipated consequences of that ordinance when it was originally put forward. And so this what staff is calling phase one was per direction from the board to very specifically tighten down on the use of TDCs. I think as we look at subsequent actions, including our adoption of smart growth policies, strategic growth policies, we'll see that what's being proposed here is completely consistent. And again, I think that's probably a more topic we'd want to pick up in deliberation at a point when staff's done and when we've received public comment.
I see staff light on, so I'm not sure if that's Ms. Griffin, if she wanted to.
Yes, it is me. Okay. I did want to go back to Supervisor Meacham's original question about sending sites and the creation of new sending sites.
Mm-hmm.
Although this ordinance does limit those to community-based programs, it doesn't limit the creation of new community-based programs. So if there were an area that was appropriate as a sending site, they could establish themselves as a community-based program and create a new sending site.
But we won't know that until the mapping and all of that is...
No, they could actually do that today. Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment, too, to get some clarity on why we're here and what we're doing. This effort really was in response to some of the issues that were occurring with the existing TDC program, some of the issues that needed to be addressed. And I might point out that during the life of the program, it had been amended 4 times to address some of the issues that were learned basically through the implementation of the program. And originally it was hoped that this program would help retire some of the lots in the antiquated subdivisions. And I know the Blue Ribbon Committee looked at that and determined that most, if not all, of the antiquated subdivisions had been built out to a point and had so many different owners within the subdivision that it wasn't any longer practical to use TDCs to actually retire those lots. So that was something that the Blue Ribbon Committee did determine, and that was more or less taken off the table. And I was able to attend a few of those Blue Ribbon Committee meetings during the process, and it was a monumental effort on the 15 people that agreed to participate in that. And they did come from a broad base of community members, and we had good representation. And these recommendations that we're addressing today are ones that came from that that effort. And I do appreciate it, and I do think it is well-balanced. And I agree with Supervisor Gibson that going forward, we do need to find a way to develop a program that will accomplish the goals of what the original TDC program did, which was to preserve rural open space and agricultural land and natural resources and move development to the more urbanized areas where services are available. And I think the concept is good. It's just a matter of working out how we get there.
Okay. Thank you. If there's no more questions at this time, I'll open it up to public comment because we have several requests to speak. So let me begin with Terry Orton, followed by Mike Brown.
Hello, Terry Orton with Westland Engineering. We really do appreciate all the work that the Blue Ribbon Committee put into that. I've been on a couple of those in the past, and they are a lot of work, but I never had to go through 33 meetings, so just thought I'd mention that. The thing I'm here today is I'm requesting that the credit requirement for doing subdivisions is not implemented, and that's Section 22.24.070.B.2. The thing I'd like to talk about is, at the moment, there's not a lot of credits out there. And I understand there's some in the South County and a few in the North County. And that's going to make it very difficult to actually know how to implement this because, for instance, the ones in the South County, I believe, are the ones that the Land Conservancy has, and they've agreed only to use those in Black Lake Canyon. So because of that, the remainder of the South County would not be getting any credits. And the ones that are out there are pretty expensive at the moment. Now, that could change, but they're in the $75,000 to $150,000 range. With that thought in mind, there's really not many places that you're going to be able to use the program right the way it's being proposed. And because of that, it seems like we're creating something that is not useful today. And if it's not useful today, seems like the best thing to do is not put it into an ordinance that we're going to have to go through and have additional steps that have to take place in order to work around that. And with that, I'm suggesting then that we don't implement that particular part and maybe reconsider it if there's going to be additional sending areas or that sort of thing. And that would end up making it where it would be easier in the future on the particular program. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, followed by Jerry Bunin.
Thank you, Supervisors. Mike Brown representing CoLab. We, too, oppose the adoption of Section 22.24.070.B.2, which is one of the main added sections. What it says is that if, say, someone had a 40-acre lot parcel and the existent zoning, the conforming zoning, allowed 20-acre lots, that you'd have to buy a credit to implement the zoning that you already had. And it may be in relationship to a broader smart growth policy or the old policy of trying to get rid of some of the antiquated subdivisions, but I'm not sure that nexus really works in this case. It's a far leap, and we feel that that policy, ultimately, all other things being equal, is really a taking. Here you've lived on your property. You might have your house on the west side, and you could split it into two 20-acre parcels and have another house, which might be your pension or way to survive here. And you're told, no, you must, if a credit's available, or, buy it. And if you look at the sheet from the Land Conservancy, and this is the one I have is 2007. I don't know if there's another one. For a single residential family credit at $75,000. For something called a residential suburban, it's $100,000. And for a rural residential, it's $150,000. So we feel that this is oppressive, and you ought to forego that one. You know, again, it's the big question is what are you trying to do? I've had experience on the ground in operating transfer of development. It's called transfer of development rights in two New England jurisdictions, in Berkeley, and an abortive attempt to try to establish it in Santa Barbara County. In Santa Barbara County, the problem was there was nowhere anybody would agree to be a receiving site. And we had antiquated lots on the Gaviota Coast, you know, at $5 million apiece would be the price. And we had a developer, you know, who was willing to sell those to extinguish them, but couldn't find any takers. Thank you very much.
Mr. Brown, a question before we get to Mr. Bunin. A letter that we received from Phil Gray, also on your behalf and Mr. Bunin's behalf. I asked both of you, actually, if you could tell me, since it said on behalf of, who your board of directors are. Mr. Bunin immediately responded and pointed me not only to the folks but the website that the HBA has, which reveals the board of directors and all of his committees and such. Could you tell us, you come here every week and you say on behalf of CoLab, might you explain to us your board of directors who on behalf you're speaking?
Supervisor, you've asked me that before, and I've discussed it with that board. And there are members and board members of CoLab, of SLO, who are very afraid to disclose their identity. They feel that it could inure to a problem later if they had something before some regulatory body. So I'm not limiting that to the
why would that
supervisor
be? I mean, the HBA reveals it is transparent. Farm Bureau is transparent. The Wine Alliance is transparent. The Sierra Club is transparent. Why is your 501c group unwilling to be transparent?
Right.
No, I think it's relevant.
I don't see where it's relevant.
I do see where it's relevant, and I'll take the prerogative to get Mr. Brown to comment.
I gave you the answer.
Your members prefer to remain secret.
I told you that some of our members were fearful. Yes, sir. Anything else I could help you with? By the way, as I said, I have had some experience operating.
We've heard you, and we'll move on. Mr. Bunin.
Thank you very
much. Followed by Eric Greening.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. I hope you won't hold this against her, but we met with Karen. She was very, very helpful. We found that the ordinance was difficult to figure out what was going on, and she certainly limited and corrected a lot of our misapprehensions and failures to recognize what was actually happening. But as I listen to this discussion, I have a whole new set of questions about where we are and where we're going. And I'm not sure if today is the appropriate venue for that, but it is kind of difficult to figure out where this is on the road. You know, when I read the staff report, I thought, well, are we eliminating the TDC program? But now I hear we're going to come back with a phase two. So that inspires me with other questions like, well, what happens if I want to build in the South County or South Atascadero and all the available units are gone before phase two starts? And I don't expect an answer today, but as I listen to all of this, it is very confusing. So if you could give us a brief synopsis of that, I'd be less confused. I'm not sure I ever get totally unconfused. Two other more specific problems. You know, going from a program that was voluntary to one that's mandatory is difficult to accept. It's not pleasant. I sat out there writing news stories about it when it was happening, and I remember all five supervisors absolutely stating it was going to be voluntary, and now it's not going to be. And like my colleagues and cohorts speaking on this, we feel that there's a distinction between applying this to somebody seeking a different zoning and somebody seeking a land division to use the actual zoning on their land. So that if I had a 20-acre parcel and the zoning is one unit for every 10, I don't really feel like I'm increasing my density by trying to use that. So that's why I think we're focusing on that one exception. And I think that is it for me today. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bunin. Mr. Greening, followed by Jamie Kirk.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I'm basically in support of the staff recommendation. And yes, there has been quite a history of adjustments to try to get this closer to what the original intent was. And I remember the Design Your Future conference about 20 years ago. So it's been talked about and worked on for a long time. But one very important change was to stop putting receiving sites in agricultural land. That was done several years ago. And these are further adjustments that could move it closer to the original intent. Because even with the past adjustments, we have created several times more entitlements than we have retired. And generally, these entitlements that are created, these receiving sites, are not transit-oriented development. They're not what we talk about when we talk about strategic growth. They're parcels of 1 acre or more, very auto-dependent sites. Now, on this question of voluntary, no one is forced to subdivide. So I guess the question could this become a standard mitigation for subdivision? In other words, there is a difference between a taking and a not giving. When you're asking for parcels that you don't now have, you're asking for something from the public, and the public does have, and you as its agents do have a right to get something in return if there's a nexus and rough proportionality. So I guess the only practical question I would have relative to that recommendation is, since part of the exemption process would be due to simply the happenstance of whether there were credits available or not, would the county become vulnerable to lawsuits based on equal protection of the law, based on the simple happenstance that when so-and-so was applying, there were credits available, so they had to buy one, as opposed to so-and-so with an equal type of project who didn't? If the county would become vulnerable that way, then perhaps you need to discuss it. But I don't think there's a basic problem with the intent. That said, and I should also mention that unless we have that particular increment in there, essentially we will be looking for ways to break the rules in order to have receiver sites go in. And that's why there's so much resistance to receiver sites. Okay, this is the minimum parcel size, but then we'll go below it with a receiver site. That's what led to the friction in at South Atascadero, and we finally settled on, okay, we'll go a little bit below it. But do the rules mean what they mean? Does a neighborhood have to put up with breaking of the rules in order to retire these sending credits to receive the credits? That's the basic question. Or when someone is asking for someone they don't have, is this a price that can be extracted? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Ms. Kirk, followed by Phil Gray.
Thank you, Chairman Hill, honorable board members. My name is Jamie Kirk. I'm a District 5 resident. I will talk to each of the issues. Issue number one, the sending sites being new sending sites only being allowed within community-based programs. We know there hasn't been an inventory done, so we don't know if there are sending sites. I think there are more opportunities for South County, but looking at South Atascadero, there aren't many opportunities for sending sites in South Atascadero. It's part of the colony. They're small lots with the majority of them developed. And we understand the reasoning behind looking at the sending sites within the community-based programs because there wants to be a relationship between the sending sites and the receiving sites. And we understand that, but there gets to be this conflict. And whenever you read the purpose and intent statement where the purpose, it says to relocate development from environmentally sensitive lands, lands with ag capability or antiquated subdivisions to more suitable areas. But what we're doing is saying the sending site and the receiving site are one and the same. And I'm just trying to wrap my head around it intuitively. Just it doesn't make sense to my brain that they are one and the same place. So I think Mr. Meacham talked to the consequences of that is it takes away our ability unless somebody wants to go through the community, a new community-based plan is, Ms. Griffin said, of retiring those antiquated subdivisions, which has been that whole problem we've been trying to fix over the last umpteen years that this program has been in place. Recommendation number two, I think I'm going to support this recommendation because I think this is what the board direction went towards back in the day whenever we were moving forward on this exercise. We wanted to stop having the density bonuses in the rural areas and wanted to put them in the urban areas. So I'm going to support that recommendation. Recommendation three and four, I'm not going to support because, for one, these recommendations specifically conflict with the purpose and intent statement on page 7 of your staff report that states that this is a voluntary program. Landowners are not obligated to use the technique to request an amendment to the general plan or subdivide their property in conformance with Chapter 22. So there's a specific provision in the intent statement that says general plan amendments or subdivisions shouldn't have to pay for a TDC. There are some concerns, the cost. The TDCs in the North County have been going $15,000 to $20,000. We hope that would remain the same, but we can't control it because it's market-driven. South County, as Mr. Brown alluded to, they're a lot more expensive. The cost of the credit, that's not absorbed by the property owner. It goes to the buyer, and so it's going to further decrease the affordability of properties. And this whole notion of this being ability to solve this cost to sprawl notion. And the cost of the TDC doesn't go to the county. The county isn't getting the money for it. It's going into a landowner's pocket. So it's not there isn't going to be the relationship of purchasing this TDC for a conforming subdivision in the rural area. The county isn't going to get the money for services because it's going to go to the landowner for the sending site. I'm out of time, so that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Kirk. Phil Gray, followed by David Gray.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I sent each of you an email late last week, and I've repeated it in a yellow copy that Jerry Bunin has handed out. I'd like to focus on the items on the second page of that handout, basically the reasons for our urgent request simply to delete that subparagraph 2 that requires the credits to be applied for land that is presently properly zoned for more units than it now has. First thing is, it's really a taking. You're asking a person to pay an unlimited, indeterminate price for the right to develop lots that he's already zoned for. That's plain wrong. It's a taking. It's capricious. It only applies to two small areas in the county. Everybody else skates. It's unreasonable. If credits are available to be retired, then the subdivider must buy them at whatever price is asked. But if the supply it runs out, he skates free. The next subdivider may not pay at all. That's not right. It's inconsistent. They can be exempted from a requirement by an administrative process that is not defined well at all in the ordinance. There's no nexus. What does a man who subdivides his land 10 feet outside the urban reserve line, what connection is that due to an antiquated subdivision or some other property 50 miles out in the countryside? But you're forcing that connection. You're making this man pay to a lot retirement process. That's really just not right. So we ask you, please delete that subparagraph 2. The subparagraph 1 is fine because it involves a general plan amendments and creating density where there was none before, so that's not an unreasonable requirement. But it is unreasonable, we believe, to require it of existing properly zoned land, especially with a complicated administrative process that sometimes applies in certain areas, but only if credits are ready, are available for the purchase. That's not good legislation, gentlemen. I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Mr. Gray, followed by Mr. Norcus, Glenn Norcus.
Hi, I'm David Gray. Good afternoon, supervisors. I also am recommending deleting the requirement that properly zoned land divisions require the retirement of development credits, section 22.24.070.B2. I also believe there's a taking and that there is no nexus. And I also believe that the original intent was to be a voluntary program. I also believe that it's not going to accomplish smart growth. The exceptions in the proposed change and the limited credits available virtually assure that the procedure will be little used. And anyways, thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. Norcus, followed by Jim Smith.
Good afternoon. My name is Glenn Norcus. I've been a resident of San Luis for almost 30 years now, and I usually don't speak at any of these type of things. So this is my first time up here, so I apologize if I feel a little nervous. But the thing that brought me here is because of this this credit where someone has to purchase other land and retire that to build other on their parcel. But the way the economy is now, I'm a builder, and I don't see how that's going to stimulate any growth. And it amounts to me is almost it's a land grab, and it's just another form of taxation to me. So I would ask you to strike section 22.24.070B2. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Smith?
Hello, I'm Jim Smith. As you can guess, I also oppose the transfer of development credits section. I have been working for years on a small project, you know, meeting all the government requirements and studies and geology and the biological reports, you know, all that kind of thing, and spent, you know, tons of money. Well, this project falls right in that area, and it's the kind of thing that, as Mr. Norcus said, is just going to, you know, strangle development, strangle the economy even further. So I, too, just ask that you would strike that from the ordinance.
Thank you. That is all we have on public comment, so I will close it to public comment and bring it back to the board for questions and such. I guess we should begin, if I could, with Mr. McNulty. Several of the speakers, and it also came in the email that Mr. Gray sent us, that their interpretation of this is that it is a taking, and I wondered if you would speak to that.
Mr. Chair, the speakers that used that term were talking about the provision in 22.24070B, 1 and 2, having to do with circumstances where a credit would be required in order to accomplish a general plan amendment or, in some instances, a land division, unless one of the exceptions listed in Section 3 of that section applied. I don't believe that what's laid out there would constitute a taking. I think what we have instead is, and this is sort of a common misconception in my practice is that people believe that they have an entitlement to the land use designation that's provided by the land use ordinance. And that's just not so. And as you know from your work here on the board, in order to take the land use designation provided by the land use ordinance and convert that into an entitlement, you need to go through a discretionary review process. Conditions have always been imposed as part of that process. And when the conditions are satisfied and you actually go out and begin to construct, or when other certain limited vesting opportunities through statutes apply, then you have an entitlement. I don't think that these requirements, as long as they are supported by nexus and rough proportionality, as Mr. Greening mentioned, constitute a taking or would constitute a taking. It's just, you have to think of it in the context of someone coming in to get a subdivision today. They already have numerous requirements that need to be satisfied before they can actually go out and record a subdivision map. This will just simply be another requirement that will be part of that process that they'll need to satisfy prior to recordation.
So just to summarize, the problem is that people are conflating designation with entitlement, which is a problem in terms of their interpretation here.
That's what I
having heard. A designation does not entitle. The entitlement process is discretionary. Conditions are always, you know, applied, and this is just a condition that the county is applying in terms of the TDC.
That's what I heard from the speakers today. They thought that because they had a zoning designation, for example, that allowed 10 units per acre, that they were entitled to 10 units. That process has always been subject to environmental review. It's mm-hmm. always been subject to the numerous conditions that the county imposes on those kinds of projects. And often, in order to accomplish them, there are compromises that need to be made, that, you know, you get 8 units or you get 5 units or something like that as a result of conditions particular to that property that are supported by nexus and proportionality. And this is the way I see this proposal today. It's just simply another one of those. Mm-hmm. It's something else that will need to be accounted for and as part of the either subdivision or general plan amendment process.
So it would be akin to someone who applied for a subdivision, had the entitlement or had the designation, applied for it, but in the entitlement process, say the environmental review is understood that, say, a couple of lots would cause enough environmental problems that they shouldn't be approved, and therefore that was a discretionary decision based on environmental review, not a taking, just a condition.
That's right. I think everyone understands that there is the ability to regulate the subdivision of land to a great degree before you get to the point where you've actually, you know, removed its economic value or interfered with someone's reasonable economic expectations. And I think that this program, as it's laid out here, and in particular with the exceptions that apply, clearly falls within that.
Staff had light on, and then I'll go to...
Just to follow up on that, one of the speakers testified to requiring credits for construction, and I did want to clarify that it was not for construction, which, different from a subdivision, is a ministerial permit, but rather for subdivision of land, which is discretionary.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Hill. I wanted to follow up with what one of the speakers commented on, Mr. McNulty. They said there's a inconsistency between what is recommended on page C33 and what's in the actual ordinance under 22.24.010, where it says this program is voluntary, incentive-based, and market-driven. Between willing sellers and buyers, landowners are not obligated to use this technique or request an amendment to the general plan or subdivide property in conformance with Chapter 22.22. What is the conflict? I mean, is that preventing us from doing what we're wanting to do with the subdivision the general plan amendment?
I think the point there is that if you look at those requirements that we've just been discussing, you could construct an argument that, in fact, in some cases, unless one of the exception applies, you will be obligated to retire a credit before you can proceed with a general plan amendment or a land division. If the board feels that that indeed is what's proposed by the changes that you're making, that are proposed to be made on page C317, you could consider amending this purpose and intent language as well. In order to do that, though, I think I was wondering whether or not we would need to reintroduce the matter and have another hearing.
Let me speak, if I might, to it, Mr. Chairman. It's quite clear from the essence of the staff report and the recommendation of the Blue Ribbon Committee. I look at that as a oversight of, and what I'm thinking is we need to strike the last sentence in that paragraph A. I see that as an oversight, given the clear intent of where this ordinance was headed.
You know, the we're operating today in the zoning ordinance, and the zoning ordinance is one of those ordinances that's allowed by the government code to be amended without first being introduced and then acted upon at a subsequent hearing. So I believe that you could strike that last sentence if indeed that was the desire of the board.
Where are you talking about striking?
It's page 7.
C37, and it's in paragraph 22.24.010A. That's the
The very last sentence, Frank.
The last sentence of the first paragraph there.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, staff didn't propose striking that language initially because of the exceptions. However, if your board feels it's clearer to strike it, then it wouldn't affect the implementation of the ordinance. In addition, I did also want to, as of course when you read something again and again and again, you never quite see it until you're reading it for the final time. I did find a couple of small mistakes that I'd like to correct for the record today. On page C317, one of those is in the introduction paragraph to B. There's a second period that needs to come out. And in B1, in reading this again, I realized that staff's intent wasn't clear. The sentence reads, transfer of development credits shall be required to be retired when a property owner requests a change to a land use category, which would result in an increase in density over what is currently allowed through establishment of planning area standards. The intent of that sentence is that when someone requests a general plan amendment, that new planning area standards would be established that would require the use of credits. So in order to clarify that sentence, we would recommend that after currently allowed, you just put a period, and then you start a new sentence that says use of transfer of development credits shall be set through the establishment of planning area standards. And there was just one other question that came up during public testimony that I thought it might be helpful to answer. And I believe it was Mr. Bunyan who asked what would happen to a subdivision that came in and requested subdivision and all the credits were used up. And the review authority, as part of making the decision to whether to approve, conditionally approve, or deny that subdivision, could also make the exception requirement and just say that there's no credits available anymore.
And allow it if
allow
appropriate.
It. That's correct.
And may I continue then?
Please.
Yeah. That's a clarifying point, Ms. Griffin, that I wanted to pursue. As I understand it, several of the speakers this afternoon commented on the fact that there may not be credits available, and as I understand this, if there aren't credits, then there's no requirement. Is that correct?
What would happen is when the map came before either the Subdivision Review Board or the Planning Commission, they would find that no credits are available and grant the exception under B3.
Okay, and for clarification purposes again, Mr. Orton mentioned the South County community plan and the fact that the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County has possession of those credits, and he mentioned that they could only be used in the Black Lake area, and I don't know if that's true or not. I wanted clarification on that, but if that is the case, then is the rest of the South County area then exempted from that requirement if they're not available to use outside of the Black Lake area?
The way that the ordinance is currently written, the credits available in South County can be used anywhere in the South County area. And from the description of the cost of the TDCs available in South County, it sounds like the Conservancy would allow sale of those outside of the Black Lake Canyon area because they referenced other land use categories that don't exist within the Black Lake area. So,
the Land Conservancy lists other?
They listed, at least according to the testimony, residential single-family zoning, suburban zoning, and residential rural zoning. Suburban and single-family zoning don't exist within the Black Lake Canyon area. So, but there's nothing that limits their sale in the South County in this ordinance. They can be sold anywhere in the South County.
Okay, but is the restriction through the Land Conservancy? That's my question.
That would be something we would have to ask the Land Conservancy. And
a representative is here. I wonder if we can get clarification on that.
Mr. Hill.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hill and members of the board. I'm Bob Hill. I direct the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. A couple of the speakers in the discussion now refer to a policy that our Board of Trustees adopted in May of 2007. I can go over a couple of the highlights of that. What our board attempted to do was to echo and codify the community-based plan that the South County Advisory Council and the Napomo Community Advisory Council prior to that had put forward, which attempted to establish a pricing schedule that would be enough such that the Conservancy could use proceeds to actually go out and buy other property for conservation purposes, but would still be priced such that the project proponent of a parcel map or subdivision would still have a reasonably expected profit margin within that. And so what we tried to do in 2007 is look at where the market was. What we know now is that the market today isn't what it was in May of 2007. Our policy, therefore, indicated that from time to time we would revisit our pricing schedule, and we haven't done that since then. Honestly, we haven't had a lot of inquiries that would cause us to look at a revised pricing schedule, but that's certainly something we would do. In terms of where we would sell a credit, well, certainly what our policy indicated is that we would only sell credits where the project was supported by the South County Community Advisory Council. So it wasn't limited to Black Lake Canyon only. Rather, what the policy says is we would only spend proceeds from the sale of credits in Black Lake Canyon for further conservation activity and for restoration and stewardship purposes. So that's an important distinction. We would sell credits to any project in the SCAC jurisdiction that was supported by that body, but we would only use proceeds in Black Lake Canyon, which was, again, the community-supported conservation area, the target that we were trying to protect.
Great. Does that thank you, Mr.
Questions?
Hill. That sure clarifies my question. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, Bob. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And following up on that, what Mr. Hill's just related at the lectern really gets at the heart of why we're here to modify the TDC program. TDCs came in a long time ago with great hope, and I still think it's a fundamental concept that we need to pursue. We have more than enough lots of legal record in the rural areas of this county, and we need to figure out how to retire development potential in a voluntary, incentive-based way, working through the regulatory framework of our land use ordinance, and potentially allow some or much or maybe all of that development potential to be placed where it is more logically accommodated. That's really the heart of the strategic growth policies that we have adopted. So what we're working on here is completely consistent. What Mr. Hill's describing and what was referenced was a community-based plan that is actually working, had been working reasonably well until I think the economy brought it to rather a significant halt. And the keys there are that the community understands what's being conserved and where the other development potential is going to go. It's really a key that we've talked about that at great length as we've talked about TDC programs in general. The community needs to see what's saved and supports what's saved, and the community needs to understand that there's going to be a particularly a place where that development potential is going to go. There's another community-based program operating in the coastal zone in Cambria. It's been very successful. I think the program has been less successful in Atascadero. And as we move away from that, what we have found over the years of experience is unintended consequences were getting results that created more lots than was being being retired. Essentially, the cost of the conservation, which is really the intent of the program, was getting to be too high. And so it was, I'll take you back to March of 2009, the intent was to see about winding the current TDC program down and replacing it with one that would actually work. And there's a long history throughout the country, including where these things started on the East Coast, and members of the Land Conservancy Board have done a lot of research to show what is at the heart of a good transfer development credits program, where does it work, and what we're finding is the one that we have on the books right now comes up short in a couple of instances. So the recommended action that's before us today is completely consistent with the direction that we gave in March of 2009, which was to get very precise and rather constrained about how we wind up the current TDC program. I'm very excited about the potential of Phase 2. I'd like to hear what it's going to cost. I think it is a fundamentally important component of where we move forward with efforts to encourage growth and see growth where it makes sense in this county. I do support the recommendations. I would note again that it was passed by the Blue Ribbon Committee on this, the use of credits for both subdivisions and general plan amendments, and unanimously, it was, as you indicated, the one thing that the almost, at least close to consensus from that very diverse committee, and I think it's an important thing that we do need to adopt today. With that, let me touch on two things. I would certainly support striking the one sentence in the purpose and intent language. This is on, again, page 7, the last sentence in the first paragraph under 2224010A. The exceptions are there. The exceptions are clearly written and provide the necessary escape valve should credits not be given. So I would, at a point when we get down, if there are motions to approve this this ordinance amendment, I think that that would be very helpful to get rid of that to get rid of that sentence. I would like to just comment briefly on the use of a credit for subdivision in the rural areas and for the use of general plan amendments that increase increase density, and we can go back to the specific language that Ms. Griffin proposed at one point. But the nexus is clear. Again, operating under the policy decision that we've made, that we have enough lots of legal record. If someone wants to create new lots, which is a voluntary and discretionary process on the part of the regulation, if new lots are to be created, there's quite clear nexus to the retirement of lots through the purchase of TDC credits. That conservation has been done already is part of the mechanics of the program. I would argue that there's a case to be made that use of one credit to create one new lot through subdivision is perhaps less than it could or should be. And I don't know if colleagues want to pursue that idea, but as I read this, I go back to the history of how the TDCs, particularly in the North County, would create it. And I think a case could be made that to create a new lot, we might want to require two or possibly even three credits be purchased for the creation of a new lot. And again, I don't know if colleagues are interested in going down that path, but the math is simple. The credits, the 33 credits remaining in the North County, were created by conserving some 5,300 plus acres. On that particular piece of property, there were at that point 52 lots of legal record that were extinguished by the creation of credits. Those 52 lots were extinguished, and in their place were created 173 credits. And that's really one of the fundamental problems of our current TDC program. 53 potential residential sites were retired, but 173 were created. And lots of ifs and ands and asterisks that I won't go into, but you could argue that that was a 3-to-1 increase in the number of potential development sites. And so as we look at retiring the last 33 of those credits, since it appears, unless a community program comes up, that no new credits would be created, I think we could quite easily justify using two credits where it says one now, and be happy to engage that discussion. I think the exceptions, as I said, do provide the appropriate level of the exceptions provide a level of exception. What I meant to say was they provide an acceptable level of flexibility to account for the fact that credits may cease to be. At a point, we need to have the next version of transferable development credits on the books in this county, and I think we need to be considering how we work on it soon.
Okay. Let me throw a couple of things out there, and I really do sincerely have questions for my own edification, for whether it be colleagues or those who even spoke today. What I see because this is part of a larger discussion that we've had in the county for a while now, really, even before my time on the board, about rural land use. But the great paradox that I see, and it's even a terminal irony, is that people who consider themselves conservative, and you know, my understanding of their term, or at least when I grew up, people who considered themselves conservative believed in things like conserving the historic character of places and not having government waste its money. These same people who consider themselves conservative are gung-ho for a pattern of land use that is truly wasteful. It's destructive of character, and it asks all of the residents who live within the urban and village reserve lines, which are most residents, to subsidize the development of rural estates. It is an unuse wise of money. It is asking the rest of us to pay for that kind of pattern of consumptive and expensive land use. And I don't understand, and I've yet to hear a logical or even ideological consistent answer, how you can be conservative in all these areas, how you can say the government should not waste its money, but we should let people build in a way that is going to waste our money and going to hurt the character of our rural areas. I don't get that. I don't understand that. I haven't, you know, I wait to be edified on how that. Perhaps it's just the nature of anyone to who subscribes to certain points of views to allow for inconsistencies on areas of self-interest. I don't know. But that's what we're talking about. I mean, when we talk about things that have been demonized somehow, like certain kinds of growth patterns that direct growth away from rural land use, it started out traditionally always being defended as the most efficient way to use resources, to use land, and to spend government and taxpayer dollars. Now somehow those folks who somehow oppose it haven't really explained how that's not the case. They've just explained how they don't like it. That's not the same thing as saying, well, this is how this is consistent with my conservative views of government. So I still find myself unclear on that great paradox, that real gap in thinking. I don't find myself, I think that the section 2 that we've been focusing on allows for exceptions that can be made as the administrator feels, the administrator of the program feels necessary. I'm comfortable with what's there as opposed to adding, you know, to perhaps multiplying the number of credits that someone would have to seek. I think that there's enough discretion already. I don't, you know, myself feel that we need to apply more discretion. I think that this is one part of, and it was mentioned as a sort of a denigration, but it's really, it is one part of the kind of more efficient land use that we are trying to establish within the county, with understanding fully that it's not to everybody's favor, but it is absolutely defensible in terms of the use of government monies and the use of taxpayer monies. In fact, it's ultimately defensible, I think, when it comes to that. It's indefensible to say we should allow for the rest of us who live within these reserve lines to pay for people who have property outside it, who want to build outside it. So that's what I feel. I'm okay with striking that last sentence as well. I think Mr. McNulty did a very good job of explaining the problem, why people often want to jump to the term taking, and I understand there's great sensitivity about that, but it needs to be understood that land use designation is not land use entitlement, and that the process of land use entitlement is one that, because of its discretionary nature, always imposes certain conditions that applicants will either meet or not meet, up to them. So with that said, I'll pass it back to colleagues for comments or motions or...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the ordinance presented with a couple of amendments, and I'm looking at the recommendation. We will also approve the proposed negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act. One amendment would be to drop the sentence on page C37 that we've been talking about at the end of 22.24.010, first paragraph of A, delete the last sentence. And the second amendment would be in on page C317 to be determined if we get a second and get into discussion here.
Well, then there would be
exhibit B and D correction, and the typos that Ms. Griffin read into the record. I just there's a little bit of wordsmithing I think we need to do on page C317, paragraph B, sub 1. Ms. Griffin made an attempt, and I wanted to go back and visit that. And then down at the bottom of the page, there may be another typo. I see a paragraph labeled BC. So,
do you want to specify?
Well,
since you're making the motion.
So, since I'm in the motion, under B1, property owner initiated general plan amendments, my change would be transfer development credits shall be required to be retired when a property owner requests, and then I would start editing, when a property owner requests a general plan amendment, which would result in an increase in residential density over what is currently allowed, period. It's not just a change of land use category. It might be a change of standards or some other thing that might be requested. And it's when a property owner requests a general plan amendment, which would result in an increase in density over what is currently allowed, period. And whether we add residential density or development density in there, that would be my thought.
Residential or
and I guess development density over what is currently allowed. Use of TDC, you know, this and again, Ms. Griffin may help me out here. She was then going to put in a phrase, start another sentence, something to the effect of use of TDCs shall be set through establishment of planning area standards. and should we say specific, and in that idea you're talking about the number of TDCs and what the, how about, and then, so then the following sentence after the period after currently allowed, the specific use of TDCs shall be set through establishment of planning area standards.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm Tim McNulty. If I could just comment on that. I agree with that proposed change. The point there is when you're making a general plan amendment, you're not really establishing conditions like you are when you're approving a subdivision or another discretionary permit. So the way that we would impose those on a future discretionary permit would be through the application of planning area standards to the general plan amendment itself.
Thank you, Mr. McNulty.
And I can restate the motion if you'd like, and the clerk would
please
be happy. So, again, my motion is to approve the ordinance presented and the negative declaration and the proposed negative declaration with the following amendments. Striking the last sentence of 22.24.010A, first paragraph, last sentence is gotten rid of. That typographical errors in section 22.24.070, paragraph B, which is the double period, is corrected, and paragraph B1 is rewritten to read, transfer of development credits shall be required to be retired when a property owner requests a general plan amendment which would result in an increase in development density over what is currently allowed. Starting a new sentence, the specific use of TDCs shall be set through establishment of planning area standards. And further down on that same page, I believe we need to strike the B in front of C and renumber that.
Actually, that B does have a strike out through it. You just can't see it.
Okay. So then at the bottom, the amount of bonus paragraph is labeled C.
Question, are you striking the first sentence and B1, property owner initiated general plan amendment?
No, I look at that as just a label for that Mike. For that sentence.
Your mic's a little.
So that sentence stays.
It's not even really a sentence. It's just a label okay. Similar to land divisions in the next one.
Okay.
And I think that's the substance of my motion.
With Ms. Griffin's edits.
Correct. Right,
that exhibit B. Yes. I'll second.
Okay.
I would like to comment if I may. Mr.
Okay.
Bell.
Moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. And Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Thank you. I had extensive involvement with the creation of the South County, the South Atascadero TDC community plan, and it was evident through that process, and the reason that effort was initiated was because of the way the program wasn't working as intended. And the convening of the Blue Ribbon Committee, which again had a very diverse membership who studied this issue extensively and came up with these recommendations to help address the most immediate concerns with the TDC program. And I want to honor that effort. I think they've done their work, and they've come up with good suggestions that will get us through this phase. And I, too, feel that the transfer of development credit idea is a good one to help preserve our rural character and our natural resources, give rural landowners the development value of their land without actually developing it, which, as Chairman Hill pointed out, is actually more expensive to the other taxpayers throughout the county, and it directs that development into the more urbanized areas where services are available. It only makes sense. And I do hope that we can move forward with a program that accomplishes those goals, and we get that in place in the near future to have a more robust and effective transfer of development credit program.
Okay. And I just wanted to say that I am truly sincere in saying that I would welcome and find it useful and edifying to have a conversation about how
favoring rural land development jibes with conservative values. And I mean that for whether it be colleagues, whether it be citizens, whether it be leaders of non-secretive groups. Those are things that would be helpful. That's just, you know, those are things that I understand some of the some of the qualms that people have with making certain kinds of land use policies work as well as their intention, but that's not the same thing that I'm asking. So so I remain willing to hear more and open to hear more. And with that, Madam Clerk, let's call for a roll.
Will the motion maker like to
waive the reading? Yes, Madam Clerk, of course.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
I'm not going to support this at all. I think that if you want to see the left side of the board or the right side of the board, the conservative board, you want to call it, and with all respect, I don't think you're looking for edification. You're looking for agreement. And I think that by striking this voluntary thing, this kind of goes to the heart of what's happening in California right now. Let's be more restrictive. Let's find ways that we can prevent more things from happening. I can't support this. No.
Mr. Teixeira?
No.
And Mr. Hill?
Yes. Okay. No, I think, thank you, Madam Clerk. I think that we withdrew the next item. Do we need to introduce it? I think we already had that on the record. So with that, we are adjourned until next week. Thank you.